Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recaps Q&A edition for November of 2017. I am Nick here with Chris, and we are going to ask some questions and answer some questions today.
Yeah, all the important questions in the world. Like, Nick, do you think Netflix Marvel shows are contractually obligated to have a terrible police officer-related B-plot in every series?
Oh my god, I've been watching Punisher, I'm about four episodes in, and I'm just like, why the fuck is this boring shit happening?
Why is there a shitty police slash government agency
so subplot? Much time dedicated to it? It's killing the whole thing for me.
My brother gave a good recommendation, and that is, every time they're on, just fast forward. Just start fast forwarding through the episode and come, like, hit press play again once Micro's back on the screen. He's arguing with Punisher over sandwiches or whatever. Like, just do that and you'll enjoy the show a lot more.
There have been two interesting characters in the entire series thus far, and it's them. That's it.
I would 100% at this point.
Okay, well, there was the corrupt police guy that, you know, Frank kills, but. That happens like two episodes in.
I would 100% watch, and I hope they do it, is a, like, essentially like an Odd Couple series of Micro and Punisher, and they have to, like, share an apartment together. And, like, it doesn't have to deal with, like, the going out and killing people thing. It's just them arguing over, like, bills and just sitcom-y situations. I would love it.
Every now and then their landlord comes in to bug them, and it's Danny Rand. He's just the most annoying little shit.
They keep trying to kill him, but he just fucking kung fus out of each blow, like, oh, Iron Fist, then leaves. And he's like, go pay the rent.
They aren't paying their electric bill, and he somehow turns it into something about how in touch with the fucking zen of the universe he is. And then they make one remark that really sets him off and makes him rant like a little 5-year-old.
One of them's just like, you know, I really like chocolate. Why don't you like chocolate?
It's perfect. Fuck you. I'll kill you.
Real Mortal Iron Fist over there.
Our door is always open, Marvel. $1 million idea.
I don't know why. I presume that they've lost our email address and they're trying to find it. So remember, Weekly Manga Recap.
Come on, guys.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
So let's start off as we do with our answers from last month's questions. And that is a question we asked you guys each month. That question last month was, if you could have any sort of technique from a manga, could be any kind, in real life, what would you choose? So we got a couple answers on this one. We got one here from Red Bane who said, let's be honest, in reality, a normal would have very little use for a Kamehameha, a Solar Flare, Star Platinum, etc. Because, great or small, very few problems could be solved by shooting a brightly colored laser punch at it.
How dare you, sir?
So fuck it. I take all of those abilities Sailor Moon and her friends had when they aren't fighting, like that pen that can change your clothes and hair to whatever you want, or that rod that can heal injuries, or hell, even that compact that basically was just a cell phone. Sure, they aren't flashy, but I'm pretty sure they make my everyday life better.
Interesting.
I could see that. Although, I mean, you don't have to use it in your everyday life. I still feel like it'd be pretty sweet to shoot, like, laser beams at people. If I could...
Just to do it, you know.
Yeah, like, even if you were like, alright, you get this whole Sailor Moon ensemble, I'm like, I still get, like, the fucking Destructo Disc tiara, though, right? They're like, yes, you can have that too. Like, sweet! thank you, Base J.
Everyone's using all the like, regular utility stuff, and you're just in, like, a back alley throwing your tiara at the wall. Yeah!
It's like that scene in Ghostbusters that was awful! The new one, obviously. thank you, Base James says, if I could learn only one technique from an anime and manga, I would know the time ability used by Aeon Clock from Air Gear. And wipe that look of disgust off your face, because let me explain. Within the storm of nonsense and sexual harassment that is Air Gear, time stands out as probably the most BS ability in the series, where physics and common sense is routinely screwed in the butt. Time would give me the ability to manipulate light in order to, one, turn myself and those around me invisible, two, manipulate an opponent's brain so they can only process one of their senses, three, paralyze a person by kicking the ground really, really fast, four, create shields to lessen my opponent's blows and slow down attacks, and five, do whatever the fuck St. Elmo's Crossfire is supposed to be. He has a good point. It's a bullshit ability, but it's a pretty awesome one to have. And last one here Says from Jack Lebrano, says, as much as I would wish to have Amajiki's reappearance quirk or the robot body from Inuyashiki, the one power in manga I'd always loved when I first got into manga and wish I could pull off was something along the lines of the Resurrection of Bleach's Aron Carr. I always loved the different forms they would take, and the powers that were connected to them were always awesome to spectate at, which is why I always preferred them rather than the Bankai / Shikai of the Shinigamis.
Some of the Resurrection were really cool. I think that probably Grimmjow's is like the most straightforward. I think that Aranyera's Glotinaria and Zomari's pumpkin body thing pumpkin were a eyeball. Little bit. Maybe you don't want that. And literally the funniest thing in all of Bleach to me is still Okiora's like super mega eyeshadow form.
I enjoy that one, but it's hard to beat Yamisaurus. I don't know why. I guess it's because I'm just like, what is the point of this? Like, I don't get why this
Whoever said that the Espana went from 1 to 10? This guy, right here. She said it.
I'm so big now! What do you do? Big!
I get beat off screen, you know.
Maragon's was dope, though. I do love that fucking, like, the Grim Reaper.
Oh, sure, yeah. He looks like a freaking, giant axe-wielding Grim Reaper.
Yeah. So, very good answers there. We also got some others, but we only have so much time in a day, sadly. So, we will move on then. But we do have a question for you guys for next month as well. And, of course, it is the holiday season coming up fast upon us. So, a quick question for you guys is if you could receive any item from the manga anime world as a gift, it's your Christmas gift, what would you want? You know, this could be anything you want that comes from that world. This could be, you know, it could even be somewhat of a temporary thing. So if you're like, I want a dish, I want my gift to be a dish from Food Wars served to me by fucking Takumi, because you have very low aspirations. Something like that, that works, you know, just any gift that could come from the manga world, as your gift from Santa this year, or your non-denominational gift giver, fat man of choice.
Okay.
So yeah, shoot that question over to, or your answer over to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, and just make sure to put answer somewhere in the title, that way we know that's what this is for, and we can file that away cleanly. Simple and clean.
Do we have questions for each other?
Yeah, I think we do.
Yeah. All right. Chris, my question for you, I'll start off, sorry, okay, is this is going to be a recurring theme throughout this episode, because like I just did it over the last week and a half. Nicole and I watched the My Hero Academia dub together, like all of it, over the course of the past week. So it's very fresh in my mind.
Okay.
So my question for you is, because while I was going through it, there were certain points where I discovered, like, the way that a character was portrayed, it had never, you know, occurred to me, oh, I never, you know, really imagined them having this voice in this series, but it really does work. Like, the way that they do Shigaraki, I never imagined them having this kind of, you know, Brian Drummond sort of voice, the really scratchy, kind of demented, It's like, no, that's really, really effective though. I really like the way that's done. So my question for you is, has there ever been an adaptation of a character that was completely different from how you imagined them when you first came across that character, but you really, really like the way that it was done?
There definitely are some. I feel like I've brought these up before, so I'll mention these ones real quick, but contrary to, I guess, popular belief, I loved the 4Kids dub version of both Sanji and Usopp. I thought those voices were shockingly perfect to me.
Yo, Giza!
I don't know why. Maybe it's just the Joey Wheeler thing. Like, I was already just used to that kind of voice, and, like, I had grown accustomed to it. But I don't know why. I always thought that was like, nah, it kind of fits for Sanji. Like, a little bit of, like, a kind of, like, thug, classy thug kind of voice almost. You know, I dug it. And Usopp.
That's different from how Yu-Gi-Oh! Would have been, because you would have, like, I assume that would have been how you first encountered Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah. And
you knew about One Piece before that.
So. Yeah, I had been reading the manga before I watched any of the anime, really. Or before I watched the anime, sorry. And Usopp, yeah, it's such a weird voice, but Even today, I still think that's the best voice for Usopp that's been out there. It's just so perfectly Luffy! Yeah, it's just like he's like, he should always sound like a goober. He needs to. outside of that, I'm trying to think of like another one really stands out to me. Oh yeah, Cherrymon. I thought Cherrymon always should sound like Marlon Brando. I never thought of it before, but once I heard it, I was like, yeah, that's him to a T.
You like listen to the original Japanese, like, this is, no, this doesn't make any sense.
This is far too serious sounding. He should sound like he's trying to be serious, but a pop culture awareness should let you know that this is obviously a comedic take on the character. That's how he should sound. I'm trying to think if another one stands out to me immediately. But there's not many times where I've watched like a dub after seeing like a sub version of it or anything else like that. I'm trying to think if anyone from JoJo really stands out that way, but no, they're all spot on. The JoJo dub was, the JoJo anime was just so perfectly done. Inversely, I say Goku because even now I still hear Japanese Goku and I'm just like, this doesn't feel right. I can't place it, but it doesn't sound right.
I know that some people like, I think that literally the first complaint about an adaptation that I have ever heard in my entire life was when like a teacher in like third grade told us that when she read Charlotte's Web and then she watched the animated movie, she was like, no, this is wrong.
Oh yeah, that is like a real thing. Like when you, cause especially with books, you read a character's dialogue and sometimes their thoughts for so long, you get an idea for what their voices were. Now there aren't too many books I've read that became movies or things like that. But I do remember that being like a thing when the Animorphs series came out when I was like, none of you feel like you're the characters to be, which is weird. Man, they drew you on the covers.
That seminal Animorphs television series that was
the classic.
It's all in your hands, kids. All right. I have to say, I imagine that not a lot of people, would have envisioned Severus Snape being all Alan Rickman-y. And then after Alan Rickman played, it was like, no, it has to be like this.
Hey, like, this is exactly right. Although I remember a lot of people, I've also heard a lot of people say that Hermione is like the kind of inverse of that, where they're like, oh yeah, fucking,
Emma Watson.
I want to call her Emma Roberts. Emma Watson, perfect for it. And then as the movies went on, they're like, no, she's not. This is getting further and further away from the character.
Well, that's not her fault.
Yeah, no, it's not her fault. It's the writing that made her that way. But, yeah, I guess that was another one that was like, it seemed perfect, but later on, they were like, not my Hermione. And then everyone forgets to spell her. Like Hermione says like 8 different hashtags trending. Nick, I got a real quick question for you. Okay. It recently just had Thanksgiving. So, not actual question, but quickly, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was quite good. Thank
you. Very good. Do you guys have any, like, special kind of Thanksgiving traditions? Because the spread of Thanksgiving seems to change radically from person to person. It seems like everyone's kind of, like, Thanksgiving tradition includes one, like, oddball, or not oddball, but just, like, one dish maybe that's kind of unique to their family. Like, oh, my grandmother's from Italy, ooh, so she makes pasta. Or, like, my grandfather is the leprechaun from Lucky Charms, so he brings a lot of marshmallows and things like that.
Gotcha. I'm going to try and go through the stuff that my mom's family does real quick. Always have 2 turkeys, one of which is fried, and the other one tends to vary. Sometimes it's, you know, baked. Sometimes it's smoked. Mashed potatoes, very standard. A sweet potato thing, which depending on who is assigned the sweet potatoes that year will change sometimes. Cranberry stuff. It's like, it's not cranberry sauce. It's like a kind of cranberry jelly almost thing. I'm not sure exactly how to describe it.
Yeah, jelly. There's like a jellied cranberry sauce as opposed to like whole cranberry sauce. Yeah.
Green bean casserole. Peach marshmallow thing. I'm not sure how to describe it. It's not peach. It's like tangerine and marshmallow. It's a weird dessert thing. And there's always a ton of pies. There's always like 4 pies. Like 1 apple, some pecan, at least 1 pumpkin, and that stuff. That's all I can remember right now, but there's always a lot of it. More unusual for that family is actually Christmas, because we always have a brunch dinner.
Mm. It's just the timing of it that seems weird to you?
No. It's we always have brunch food for dinner.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think it'd be
a like a ham and egg casserole and iwaskiwa, which is Danish pancake balls.
Is your family Danish?
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm one quarter Danish.
Wow.
Got that Viking blood.
Is that why you have that mustache then?
That's why I have the beard. Yes, Chris.
More
specifically, that's why I have a red beard.
This is all starting to come together.
Red and blonde.
Like Ichigo.
I guess.
Yeah, well, they call him Strawberry. Yeah. Strawberry
now,
blonde.
Now I can't imagine Ichigo. Now I can't help but imagine Ichigo with a goatee.
Ichigo Viking. It's a pretty cool visual to have.
That's what the cool adult Ichigo would have been, instead of boring doctor, I guess, maybe, Ichigo.
Whatever he was in his four panels of screen time.
Where's your kid? Isn't that dangerous? Come inside, everyone's here.
Credits.
It's your room now.
Sorry, so slightly off topic as well, but after you brought it up, I think I've come to a new realization as well. Pumpkin pie is the candy corn of Thanksgiving, and that it's everywhere, but nobody I know seems to like it.
It's weird because it's all kind of the same. I don't know why it's so standardized, because it's, I feel like with the components, you can make it better. And I think that where it usually falls off is that the crust is too boring. I think that with a more interesting crust, it could actually be tasty.
Or maybe if it like included something, like maybe like put like chocolate chips, or like mix it in with like nuts or things like that. Like I'm just like, every time I've had pumpkin pie, I've always been like, yeah, I guess I don't need to have this again for a while. Like this was really kind of all I wanted from pumpkin pie for a bit.
Well, sometimes my family makes pumpkin cheesecake and,
that sounds pretty dope.
That it is pretty dope. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
You're just going to eat it and you're like, I don't think I should be eating this. It's like wrong.
I'm doing something dangerous, aren't I?
My body.
You're starting convulsing.
All right. So, we are going to start answering some questions. These are coming back from like, July, but there is also one left over that we skipped last time. It was a very intense multi-part involved question that I now have an answer for. So we're going to go ahead and do this. It's a question from Campy. Toei wants to do the one thing that they are best at, marketing popular stuff, but they also want to be lazy about it, as they are often. So they've approached you two to help create their new Super Sentai show, being the reputable Shueisha mouthpieces you are. They've asked you to take the characters from the currently running Shonen Jump series to create pastiches for their show. Which characters are your main five rangers? What is the theme of their team? What are their colors and mechs? Who is their sixth ranger? Who is their villain? And finally, what is the name of the show? So I came up with Wakawashi Sentai Show Ranger, which is a team of young rangers battling to find their dreams and maintain the freedom of childhood as they grow more mature and older and battle evil adults and stuff.
Okay.
So for the Red Ranger.
So just to clarify before we start this, you basically took Justin the Blue Ranger from probably the most hated early season of Power Rangers.
And made all five
and
Rangers
the most,
him.
Yeah, and made the most hated Ranger on that team. Yeah, it made a whole team. Okay, got it. Cool.
So for the Red Ranger, I've got Asta.
Jesus. I hate this team already.
Well, I really struggled with this one, because I was like, okay, I started off having a few different ones, and then I was like, okay, Asta's got to be on this team because he is, you know, the most representative of youth of the Black Clover characters. I think it's either going to be him or Rill, and fuck Rill.
Hear, hear.
And also, if Asta's going to be in the team, originally I was going to have him be the Black Ranger, but then I couldn't settle on a proper leader type from any of the other series. So I was just like, okay, fine, Asta's the Red Ranger. He pilots the Demon King Zord. Of course. Mm-hmm. Then for the Blue Ranger, we've got Chopper from One Piece.
Okay.
With the Rumble Zord. From Promised... nope, not that one's later, sorry. From Dr. Stone, we've got Suica, the Green Ranger, with her Super Detective Zord, which, of course, is like two halves of a melon that can separate and roll around.
Okay,
from
I can take that.
Food Wars, I've got Momo, the Pink Ranger, with her Bucci Zord, which is just a giant version of her stuffed cat.
All right.
And finally, for My Hero Academia, we've got Bakugo, the Black Ranger, with his Explosion Murder King Zord.
Yeah, he seems like a the real Lancer on that team.
So he's constantly, you know, the one getting in trouble, diving in recklessly. He fights with Asta because he wants to be the Red Ranger and the leader. Keeping all of these various people who are differing varying degrees of either at least, you know, weird and, you know, what's the term? Fucking, you're not crazy because you're rich. You're,
The affluenza?
No. It's like.
Spoiled?
No. Entitled? No, not privilege? Those.
Millennials?
You're not crazy. You're not
Millennials?
Crazy. The term is, you know, when you're rich, you're not crazy, you're eccentric. That's it. That was the word I was looking for. Yeah. Varying degrees of eccentricity and, you know, volatility, especially with Asta and Bakugo constantly butting heads over stuff. So they need to have a proper, like, level-headed person to keep them all in line. And that's where Yuiga comes in from We Never Learn. He's their coordinator slash Zordon figure.
Okay. Could he also be their alpha? Because I want him to walk in and go, ay, too many
totally
girls.
Yeah. Eventually, they will meet their sixth ranger, the Nameless Geezer from Promised Neverland, who's the gray ranger because he's been a ranger for such a long time that his color has faded. And he was from a previous team of child rangers, but they all died out and left him alone. And it takes him a long time to learn the value of teamwork again.
When you pitched this idea, my immediate thought was like, oh, well, MMO will be on this team. Probably should be the leader, too. It'd be perfect for her. And in Promised Neverland, the one person you took was the oldest motherfucker in the series.
I thought about it. When I thought about it, I was like, oh, MMO will be the leader of this team. And then I was like, I really like the idea, though, of having the Nameless Geezer be the sixth ranger, though.
It is poetic. I do like that idea.
So I didn't want to have two characters from the same series, and that's why neither she nor, like, Rebecca, for example, are, not Rebecca. Is it Rebecca?
Who's Rebecca, Nick? Rebecca's not
Rebecca.
Gonna be
Rebecca's not an important character. Fuck. Oh, shit, I've forgotten Mom's real name.
Isabella,
that's why. Oh, I've got such a bad thing about really vaguely similar names sometimes. It's a thing that's haunted me my whole life. Now you might be wondering, who is the villain of this show? It's Father from Codename Kids Next Door. I couldn't think of a proper manga villain for it. It was already basically Codename Kids Next Door anyway, so there you go.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I feel like Nigel would be insulted by being compared to Asta, but what can you do?
It makes you wonder, though, who are going to be the romantic couples then on this team?
Chopper and Cotton
Candy. Because 3 and 4 hook up, so...
It's going to be Chopper and Cotton Candy, Nick, obviously. OTP.
Chopper and Cotton Candy.
Yeah. He's Cotton Candy Lover Chopper. That's his pirate bounty nickname.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, because that picture of him on the wanted poster, that's right.
Well, he also loves candy.
He does. He's a child. All right.
I like
that. There you go. That's my answer to that. I hope that was satisfactory for you after having to spend the extra month waiting for it.
Indeed. I think that was a worthy start to this. So we'll move on and start trying to plow through some of these summer questions here, starting with a question from Pheasant Tail. It says, Dear YOLO of Tea, this is Pheasant Tail, and I'm adding a few characters to my June 2017 list about being mangaka and the real-life manga they'd create. So what manga would Tokoyami from My Hero Academia create?
I'm going to go with something like a Grimoire of Fantasy and Magic or something like that. Some sort of kind of darker fantasy series. I mean, I know that's kind of an obvious answer, but you look in that guy's room, what the fuck do you think kind of series he would write?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, which one. I'm almost thinking, like, Dead Man's Wonderland or Pandora Chain, I think it was. It was a series.
Grimguard, I was trying to name. There we go.
And there was one, I think it was the first Halloween month suggestion we ever did. It was, like a high school, it was like a Shonen Jump horror series set in a high school.
Higurashi no Nako Koroni?
That might have been it. I can't
one remember. That's like the time loop where
No, this is a different one. This is like a teacher. I cannot remember the name of it. I don't.
Oh, are you talking about the one where there's like one of the characters is actually dead?
All I can remember off the top of my head right now is it involved like a teacher. It was a Shonen Jump horror series. It wasn't like super duper scary, but like,
oh, okay.
I remember that being like, it was in Jump, so it fit that kind of theme that I think Tokoyami would go for, where he's like, it's dark and edgy, but it's a Jump too. So, you know, it's not too scary, but I cannot remember the name of it for whatever reason. So.
There's also two more parts to that question.
Yes, though. Gowther from Seven Deadly Sins.
I think that he would write a shoujo romance series. It would be very basic and just kind of following through the motions at first. He would write it for the purpose of trying to remember what it was like to love. And then eventually over time it would actually like get better because he would actually get more in touch with the emotions.
I think.
Yeah, I gave a sweet answer.
There you go.
Fine.
I would say he would do We Never Learn because it would start off really horny and like over the top sexual, but then eventually he realizes like, oh no, I had like real human emotions at one point. Let me add those in. But every so often he still likes to put really perverted, kind of almost like sexually creepy kind of things like he does at times when he just has like those thoughts where you're like, get out there, keep those to yourself, man. Come on.
People occasionally come by, like he asks them to read and he's like, Gather, why
are their butts
why
okay?
Why are their panties keep on like getting sucked up their ass cracks?
Are their buttholes okay? He's like, is your butthole not a vacuum? That's what mine is. He's like, Inspector Gadget. Go
so much.
Go Gadget butthole. And Senku from Dr. Stone.
Pretty sure he would write Dr. Stone.
Yeah, I think he'd write Dr. Stone. He loves science so much. Obviously, that'd be the first thing he'd talk about. And if he was forced to not solely just create Dr. Stone, he would probably then, like, say, like, Taiju forced him, like, hey, Senku, let's write something with some sports in it. He'd be like, all right, and he'd do Ice Show 21 instead.
It seems bizarrely familiar for some reason.
I feel like I fit right along in here. And second question is, with Spider-Man gain a reboot every time we turn around, are there any manga you'd be interested in seeing rebooted? Perhaps an idea you found intriguing, but that you think could be handled better by someone else?
That second part I feel like we've answered before.
I think I'd be interested in seeing like a Fairy Tale reboot at some point. I think if you could even keep like the same like kind of principal cast and just play it to the angles you didn't really focus on initially, you know, play it more into like going on missions and like inter-guild drama and stuff like that. And you could like be like, oh, hey, you know, this reboot, we're going with a fresh cast. And then, hey, halfway through, hey, Zaref's in this one too, or whatever. You know what? It reboots eventually kind of sync up at some point, but you know, there's a lot of, I think, room in the Fairy Tale universe you could explore more with like a different take.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Pheasant Tail. Very much appreciated.
Right. Next up, we've got a question from Andre Golden, one of many I think are going to be featured in this episode. Dear Makoto Negi, the ruler of hope, and Hajime Hinata T, I have random questions to ask you. Number one, which is your favorite Power Rangers theme song? Another Power Rangers question. I like a lot of Power Rangers theme songs, to be honest. Especially in particular the early ones. I mean, the first one itself is kind of the obvious answer, but it is, I think, actually a really catchy, nice song. I also really like the Lost in Space song. Not Lost in Space, just In Space.
Yeah.
My mistake. The Dino Thunder song.
I would say, well, you just took two of the ones I was going to say. So I'll say outside of Mighty Morphin, one I really love that I think is underappreciated is Jungle Fury. Jungle Fury is an awesome theme. I don't know why, but I love the shit out of that
Jungle
one.
Fury!
It's such a, like, it is 100%, like, it is that antithesis, or that perfect example of Power Rangers, where you're just like, it's so dorky and lame, but I don't care. It's awesome to me.
It is. I mean, I don't think you can listen to that song and not, like, feel happy.
Yeah. Those are my favorite, are the ones that are, like, upbeat and kind of funky and cool. Of the few Power Ranger seasons outside of the ones that ran in, like, the 90s I watched, the one I've seen the most of was SPD, which I watched all of, but I hated the theme song for SPD.
SPD Emergency.
I was like, it's so awful. Mod Force.
Question two. This is actually something that we went over recently. If you want to know how the hell it came up, you can check out our bonus episode for November of 2017, where Chris explains Kingdom Hearts via manga to myself and Annalise, because the subject of Disney princesses comes up. The question is, who is your favorite Disney princess? So I'll just go over this again. Like, I'll try and go through this really quickly. The official Disney princesses are Snow White, Cinderella, Aurora from Sleeping Beauty, Ariel from Little Mermaid, Belle from Beauty and the Beast, Jasmine from Aladdin, Pocahontas, Mulan, Tiana from the Princess and the Frog, Rapunzel from Tangled, and Merida from Brave. Anna and Elsa, for whatever reason, are not included in that lineup. Do you have a favorite character out of those, Chris?
I think that list may be a little outdated, because I'm pretty sure Elsa and Anna did get added.
They're not officially in the lineup.
Mm. All right,
I literally looked this up on multiple sources in order to verify.
I'll go say Ariel, because I like the Little Mermaid, and she's one of the few on there that's an actual princess. So I'm going to give it to her for that. Although, isn't Ariel like one of like 12 fucking princesses? Didn't King Triton
She's got like six sisters.
Who never get any focus. It's such a weird element of that series that King Triton has like six daughters and one is the focus of this movie.
He has seven daughters because there are seven seas, Chris.
Oh shit. Which one's Ariel supposed to be?
I don't fucking know. I believe that there is some sort of Tumblr thing that like has a theory as to which of them each of them represent on
from like 7 seconds of screen time. He was
pretty much.
This one clearly exemplified Indian Ocean principles and properties. Like, fuck you. This is why Tumblr's a problem.
I think it was really straightforward stuff, like Ariel is the Red Sea because she has red hair or something along those lines.
Even then, this is still this is everything I hate about Tumblr at once. And I love it too.
That's the most hate-worthy part of Tumblr.
I'm like, this is the only problem Tumblr's ever caused.
And I'm going to go with Mulan, because I fucking love that movie, and Mulan's a badass.
Not a princess.
She's not a princess, no, but she's in the lineup, and she's my favorite character in there. So, yeah. Out of the official out of actual, like, royalty princesses...
Count Kairi? She is a princess of heart. Princess of Light, she should count. I choose Alice from Alice in Wonderland based off of my Kingdom Hearts list.
Well, Belle marries into royalty, so she would actually be a princess. I like her. I also like Rapunzel. She's an actual princess. There you go.
How is the Beast a prince? Isn't he a fucking king at this point? If your parents are dead and you are the leader castle.
Hold on, Chris. We need to hold off on that, because there's eventually going to be a descendants question down the line.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. So questions here from Knopf4 said, Dear Nick, who is conflicted over whether to keep the Statistics September reviews a solid 3-hour bitch fest that push all the recaps into 30-minute segments, or to divide them up throughout the month so he can bitch at Princess of Tennis in arc-by-arc detail, and Chris, every time he hears Eric Geary, he has to fight back a 30-minute tangent on at least 80 other things that suck about the series that he didn't manage to get to during the review. Thank you. So now that Statistics September is officially a thing and you guys will be doing it until the sheer terrible disc kills you, is it a series that you dread going back over, which you think will be as bad or at least as painful to get through as Air Gear? I don't know if Air Gear was definitely the worst series to me, that, like, I read all that amount of. There's certainly probably worse series out there. Freezing definitely came like close to that level, but I didn't have any like reason to fear Freezing that much because I hadn't experienced it all ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like Flame of Recca is bad, but I don't remember Flame of Recca being anywhere near as bad as what Air Gear was or anything like that.
I mean, The Prince of Tennis is, I mean, it's kind of weird to answer this one because there are definitely series out there that I think are worse than the ones that we've actually covered for this Statistics September. The thing about them is that they aren't as frustrating as the ones that we've covered for it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very subjective thing. And The Prince of Tennis is my least favorite manga basically ever. So I don't think so for me.
We could always be surprised, though. That always could mm-hmm. be the thing that comes in.
Who knows? Maybe the second time through on something will be even worse. Yeah. So.
So, thank you for the question, Knopf.
Mm-hmm.
This one isn't actually a... Well...
the heading is Question Luffy's Intelligence from Professor Lawrence Pierce. But it just... The body of the email just reads, I think Luffy gets stupider every year. And there's no question in it. I guess you could say that the question is, how smart do we think Luffy actually is?
Or do we think that he's getting stupider? I don't think I've noticed anything that says Luffy's, like, it feels like he's gotten more dim-witted over time. I think Luffy's always just been, like, a simple person, as opposed to being outright just a complete idiot. Per se, like he says dumb things a lot of the time, but I think a lot of like his idiot moments are more just down to a very simple minded kind of person.
When he needs to do something smart, he is capable of coming up with smart ideas. The probably most straightforward one is, I mean, I don't know if this was actually his idea. It might have been like Raleigh's, for example, but the sign that he left for the other Straw Hats to see so that they knew where to reunite in 2 years. It's like, mm-hmm. That was pretty smart.
Yeah, so came up with the whole water thing to fight mm-hmm. against Crocodile with.
He's kind of one of those, like, idiot in many social situations, genius in combat types that a lot of shonen characters are. And I agree with you in general, though, that he just kind of has a straightforward nature and is very stubborn about wanting simple things. For example, denying wanting to have a crew, a fleet under his command. Because like, no, I don't want that. I want to do things my way. It's like, well, it would be very smart for you to have, no, I want things my way. Also, don't make me drink this because I don't drink alcohol.
Yeah.
I can see that though, because I guess there are going to be points in the manga where it's like, how the hell can this guy be this dumb?
Oh, I get it. Okay, sorry. So, Super Volteca in the chat has mentioned it's a Simpsons reference, and I finally got it. It's like from a Troy McClure episode. It's like a Simpsons one. I'm like, got a question here. It says, I think Homer gets stupider every year. That's not a question, but we'll see for ourselves. I got it now. But we read in between all that and found another question, so ha! Good job, us.
All right, we've got a question here from the World Trigger podcast.
World Trigger!
A-rank agent Renzi and the talented elite agent Matt M. Hello, B-rank agent Rolo T and random Tryon Cube Y-Rot.
Sorry, Nick. You're a fucking Tryon Cube.
I guess. It's your friends at the World Trigger podcast here to ask another appearance on the podcast with a few entertaining questions for your Q&A. M1, what are your side effects, if you have them at all? Well, we've been over what my actual existing true side effect is, which is I can identify Pop-Tart flavors by touch. So.
That's right. I forgot about that.
That's an actual side effect that I actually have.
I'm surprised Professor X hasn't called you yet. We need to get into Magneto's palace and other
Striker M. Stryker and the Sentinels will be knocking down my door any minute. Mutant!
Asteroid M has a complex series of locks that can only be unlocked by identifying Pop-Tarts by their touch. Magneto was positive no one had this power, but we found you.
You put it in a pitch-dark room, and there are Pop-Tart-based locks.
I feel like there's no real... I'm trying to think of a way I could turn ADD into a side effect, but I don't think it has one. I just lose focus a lot, but I have a lot of ability to multitask. Autonomy, that's kind of cool, I guess, where I'm just like, I'm going to start thinking about a manga I read 6 years ago, and then I'm like, oh, I finished 2 hours of work. What happened?
All right. Question two. What would Usopp's trigger set be? This is an interesting question because Usopp is, I think that it would be safe to say that he would generally be a sniper, but the way that he fights is also, often in closer quarters. So he would sometimes, I guess, shift into gunner. Yes. And also he's a trickster. So he would have some weirdness with that. The one thing I can say is I don't think that he would actually wear a bagworm because he's not a stealthy guy.
No, I almost think he'd be a bit more of like a, maybe like a shooter, I think is the, cause gunners are the one that actually use guns. Shooters are the ones that use Tryon as bullets, essentially. They don't use actual gun triggers, if I recall. I'm trying to remember the difference between them.
Well, the three positions are,
There's gunner and shooter are both that mid-range person, but there's ones that actually use gun triggers, like physical guns to shoot the bullets. And then there are those that just create like the cubes of Tryon that they fire them out.
Like a son. Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember which one that is. Cause I feel like he'd be that. I don't think he'd use an actual physical gun. I feel like he'd be much more into just using the tricks of kind of like combined to different bullet types.
So maybe he would just use a gun just for the sniper.
Yeah, I think he might have a gun. Essentially, I almost kind of imagine him having a similar loadout to what Osamu has, but just replace the Rygist with a sniper rifle of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just be along those same lines. So he'd probably have the spider. He'd probably maybe even have like the grasshopper. He'd have a lot of like the tricky maneuverability ones. And then he'd just have like a cool sniper rifle one that he goes into battles with and then maybe shifts it up and uses a couple different like special bullet types when they need to be applied.
All right. Question three. Which role do you have to see first in the neighborhood? Ooh.
I can't remember the names for any of them off the top of my head, but I always wanted to see that, like, marine world they talked about, just because I love water world so much. Like, water stages and games and things like that are always, like, the coolest to me, so I definitely...
What a freak. What freaks we are for that reason.
Everyone's like, oh, you mean the stages we get to drown a lot and things like that? I'm like...
They're so pretty.
They're so awesome. I love Hydro City in Sonic 3.
I love going up between different levels in the Water Temple.
This is great.
The Water Temple is great. You fight Dark Link in it.
The people who complain about the Water Temple, it's almost like I can't relate to them anymore.
Get good with the hookshot, noobs.
It's not even that hard of a temple. Fuck.
It's really not. Be fucking patient. Use your shield.
The Water Temple in fucking Majora's Mask is 1,000 times worse than that. Good lord. You have to, like, memorize flow patterns and shit. Fuck that noise.
Question four. If we never learn and World Trigger crossed over, how much bigger would Osamu's harem grow?
Well...
Osamu's got a harem?
Well, I think, like, in theory he has a harem. Because he's got, like, you know, people who want to pair him up with Chica or maybe with Katori or... Now or things like that. And obviously the right answer, Katara. But obviously when We Never Learn crosses over with it, Yuika ceases to exist as the dollar store Osamu that he is. And all of the girls immediately just fall over and flow into Osamu afterwards. So, I mean, yeah, it would grow a lot bigger.
And, I can definitely see, like, Asumi just having the exact same interactions with him, so.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, you know what, if anything else, I really want Asumi to be in World Trigger, because I feel like she would be a really fun, like this sassy fucking, like, shit-stirring sniper or something like that.
Well, her sense of humor would fit in really well with that series, honestly.
Oh, yeah. And her bust would get bigger, because obviously that's what Hashihara had to do to get her into the series. She was like, I don't know, it's like, she's kind of complicated character. I mean, she would make her a bit more simple for the boys. She's like, what if I draw her tits bigger? Yeah, go ahead. You nailed it, buddy. Go right on it. Give her all the layers you want, just as long as there's an equivalent amount of layers of padding to her bra, so to speak.
All right.
Yeah, thank you for the World Trigger Podcast, by the way. World Trigger Podcast, by the way, guys, is a really great podcast. It has been going on, especially during on this very long hiatus of World Trigger, keeping interest in the series alive. I would guest on it before. Annalise has. I'm more than happy to guest on it again. It's a very good time. It was really, really fun to be on it and get to talk about World Trigger again. So if you've been kind of missing the opportunity to talk about World Trigger or hear World Trigger or just enjoy it again, it's definitely a great podcast to listen to. They do a really good show.
Yeah.
All right. So questions here from Elemental RPS. Dear Y, oh, why am I late? I'm the ruler of time and Roly Poly T. My first question is on Shonen Battle Manga power systems. Ooh, he's always good. Writers create systems that work as a framework for how characters' powers grow and function. These systems give the writer a base to start out with for creating new characters and later challenge themselves by seeing how they can bend the rules. If these systems are used poorly, then you get situations where the author can't write themselves out of. Characters become too overpowered, the power system is more of a constraint, or things are overexplained, and some of the mystery is lost. My question is, what Shonen Battle Manga can you think of had a power system that challenged the creator's creativity, and what power systems were used poorly? So, he gives, I don't actually know if it's, Elemental RPS says, my examples for creative ones are One Piece's Devil Fruits and Zatch Bell's Spell Books. Negative examples say Naruto. So, with those in there, we could work off of that. I completely 100% agree on both, Devil Fruits and One Piece and Zatch Bell. I think Zatch Bell may be one of the best out there, because you very clearly labeled what every character can literally do. And you actually had to go through, you had to actively have character growth to get more spells, basically. Like, it was an actual element of it. So characters changed and went along. For ones that didn't work, I think Fairy Tail's one that comes up just because some characters just had very, very nebulous power sets. Like, Urza's one I've brought up time and time again, but the other characters just, who just didn't really seem to have any kind of limits to what they can do. But I think, honestly, right now the worst is Black Clover to me. It's everything that Zatch Bell didn't do, essentially, where it's like, these books have no real constraint on what they do, characters seem to develop spells all the time, there's no real limit to what a book can do when it's like, defined element is kind of stated out there, the elemental spirits aren't really properly constrained, like, they just feel very nebulous and it's hard to fully invest in it. I like some of the creativity it shows. Like, I think Magna's, like, fire-themed baseball set is kind of cool. But, like, there's other characters like Rill or, like, you know, where you're just like, what are your limits? What can't you do? You know?
I think one that's actually become kind of a little bit frustrating has been Seven Deadly Sins, because they just kind of introduced scouters after the first arc. And it's just, like, a lot of combat is just like, suddenly their power level is this.
Yeah.
Good to know. Okay.
That's a rough one. Dragon Ball Z's become it. I mean, I guess Super now. Although it was a problem in Z2, I guess, where really it just kind of comes down to an escalating scale. So it's like, okay, well, Goku is strong. Now he's a Super Saiyan. All right, we need something better. He's a Super Saiyan 2. He needs to be better. Super Saiyan 3. All right, now we need something even better. Super Saiyan God. Need something better. Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan.
Super Saiyan.
So we need something better. Super Saiyan Blue. Super Saiyan Red. Super Saiyan Gold. Now it's Ultra Instinct Mode is the new thing that just kind of cropped up.
Jesus Christ.
And look, it's cool. I fucking marked out when Ultra Instinct came out, the same as when every other form gets introduced. But it is one of those things where, like, it is just an escalating scale that never really has an end. There's not going to be a defined end, because it definitely seems like they want Dragon Ball to kind of continue on as long and long as it wants. But it is one of those things that once you know, as you recognize, it is hard to completely reconcile with it. It is one of those things you're like, yeah, but how long until Vegeta's like, all right, fine, now I'm Ultra Instinct, and Goku fights someone else who's a little bit stronger. He's like, I guess I gotta get Ultra Instinct, Super Saiyan Ultra Instinct or whatever, you know?
Yeah. It's, definitely been kind of weird. It's, that's the entire reason why they just took Scouters out of that series, because it was just like, well, the numbers are just going to have more zeros added on. Who cares anymore?
Yeah. And Dragon Ball's not the worst example of this, too. I will note that, like, even when they're in it, it's not as though these things innately. It's not as though, like, Goku just unlocks it and wins everything and is done. Like, he unlocked Ultra Instinct and still hasn't fucking beat that dude. So, it's essentially one of those things where it's just, it's a series that keeps going on. So it's just, like, they have to keep making up new forms, basically. Mm-hmm. There are other series, I think, that kind of have worse parts off with that. There's some that actually start off really good, too. Like, Toriko, I think, started off really good. And by the end, got really less defined in the way it kind of used Toriko's powers. Like, it had, like, really cool techniques that came out eventually, like infinite nail punch and things like that. But then by the end, it felt much less distinct. Or it kind of just got so obtuse it became parody, which was great, too. I mean, Sunny's fucking hair eats universes and shit. Like, it's amazing, but, you know, it has, like, its ups and downs and things like that. Yep. All right, and second question is here from Elemental RPS. A variant on Date, Marry, Kill called Eat, Pray, Love. Which character in Jump would you eat? Yes, eat, cook them up, and chow down. Which character in Jump would you worship as your god? And finally, which character in Jump would you platonically love?
First off, that first question is fucking creepy.
I want to note, this is a strange thing to me. It very much seems like you heard the game Date, Marry, Fuck, Marry, Kill, Date, Marry, Kill, whatever it is. And then you're like, Eat, Pray, Love is also a three, like, verb in sequential thing phrase. So let's go off of that. So it's like, I feel like these three things are very unconnected with one another. But I like this. I'm just trying to think. We have a whole spectrum of manga characters to go off of. And I'm kind of curious.
Well, in Jump, at least glows it slightly.
Yeah, in Jump. But I'm like, I try to think, like, what character would we eat? And I'm like, I mean,
I don't want to know the answer to this question. Like, certain sections of the internet have taught me that this is, like, a thing, and I don't want to touch it. It's weird.
Well, the Regal Mammoth, obviously. That's a character in Jump. I'm going to eat the Regal Mammoth.
Yeah, okay.
The character in Jump, I'm going to worship as my god. And Neru, obviously, he's the god of Skypiea. And a character in Jump you would platonically love, that would be Osamu, because he's my spirit animal. He's my best buddy. So, yeah, there we go. So, I just want to note, it's the way this question was phrased allowed me to pick a trio of Neru, Osamu, and the Regal Mammoth from Toriko. I'm very excited about that. God Usopp. Actually, no, change it. Reisu, Neru, it's God Usopp instead. Sorry, that's correct. One Axeman 2 is very right.
I don't have an answer for the first two, but I think that after my experience of watching the series back, the platonically loved one, I'm going to go with Uraraka, because she's trying so hard. She wants to support her parents. What a good girl.
Jelly Jiggler's another good one Lunarama Yasha threw out there to be eaten. He wanted to be eaten. Good question, Greg. Thank you very much.
All right.
Elemental.
We've got a bunch of questions from Andre Golden. I think that I'll just, like, read these emails in a row.
Okay.
So first off, we've got, Dear the Joker, the Clown, Prince of Crime, and Twisty the Clown T. Over the years, there have been a great number of Joker portrayals, like Mark Hamill, Jeff Bennett, Heath Ledger, and Jack Nicholson. My question is, who's your favorite Joker performance?
Mark Hamill.
Yeah. Mark Hamill.
Okay. I love the other ones, but Mark Hamill is, like, the perfect blend.
He is
for me.
The Joker. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, who's, it's kind of like saying, like, whose performance of Mark Hamill's Joker did you like the most?
Exactly.
Next one, Nostalgic Critic, the ruler of Channel Awesome, and that guy with the glasses, T. I recently watched the new Jumanji 2 trailer, and that inspired me to ask you this question. If you were stuck in a video game and or a manga with your friends, which character bodies would you have? I guess, are you asking, like, what characters from the video game we were stuck in or manga we're stuck in, or are you asking about what archetype would we play? Well, I guess if we're going off of the Jumanji 2 trailer example, where it's, you know, ironic because the nerd ends up in freaking Dwayne Johnson and, like, the athlete winds up in Kevin Hart, that I guess we would go
for. Hot girl winds up in Jack Black.
Yeah. Right, so we would go for, like, comedic opposites in this case. So, I don't know, let's do this together. What's a good video game to start off with that we would be stuck in?
Gauntlet. We'll go with Gauntlet.
Okay. Good choice. Okay.
You know what, Nick? I want to put a good twist on this. Let's pick each other's archetype.
So if I remember correctly, the Gauntlet characters were Sorceress and Wizard, Jester and Archer, Valkyrie and Knight, and Dwarf and Warrior.
Okay.
At least they were in Dark Legacy. I haven't played any of the games since then.
They've only done the one.
Well, there have been more Gauntlet games. What are you talking about?
I think after Dark Legacy, there was just the
Gauntlet. There was a Gauntlet game on Steam.
Well, that's what I mean. I think that was the I think that's the only game they've done since Dark Legacy.
Got it. Okay. Let's see. If we're going for comedic opposites, then, probably gonna be the Knight, like the most straightforward of all of them.
Okay.
Which means, you know, you get to wave a giant flail around with your ult. So there you go.
You're also crazy because that also lets me become the legacy monster unicorn, which is amazing.
That is true.
So, joke's on you. I'm a unicorn now. For Nick, I think you would fit best as the Jester.
I love playing the Jester.
Well, it works because you also get to be the high end. In my mind, it works because you're a very funny person, but I always imagine you in that kind of role as being too, like, serious for it. Like, you're straight faced at first. Like, it's very much like you're in Motley and you have bells around your neck. You're like, I'm not having fun.
I would probably be most humiliated in that getup, so yeah.
As a fucking ride around like a unicorn, like, hey, Nick! Stop! You're supposed to be the serious warrior!
And then I turn into a hyena, which is not nearly as goofy as a unicorn.
Nah, not at all. It's kind of scary.
I'm glad that we both remember Gauntlet Dark Legacy so well, though. That's good.
Yeah.
All right.
Great game.
No, that took us down a fun lane, so good job. All right. Two more emails from Andre Golden. Dear Mario, the Ruler of Time, and Sonic the Hedgehog T, this is a weird one. Listen to the whole thing, and you'll understand why it's weird. I thought of a dream cast of actors as you guys and the guest stars. So what are your thoughts on my choices? And there's, like, a selection for all of us here.
Okay.
So, for Nick.
Alright, I haven't read this one all the way through yet, so I'm curious as to whether or not I'm gonna be happy when I get to who I get picked as.
For Nick, Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
Rose McIver.
Alright.
J.K. Simmons.
This is a very eclectic list.
Jessica Lang or Evan Peters. Take your pick, I guess.
Wow. Like, every base is being covered there. I mean, look, I'll give props first and foremost. I love the idea of mixing gender for this casting, because there's definitely some intriguing aspects to that.
To be played by J.K. Simmons, personally.
Yeah. It's such a weird list. It's like, Reynolds and J.K. Simmons have ever gone out for the same role ever in their lives?
I think that I'm not sure if my favorites are one for teching or one for Jacob, but we'll get to it. Chris, Patton Oswalt, Jack Black,
okay, all right,
Kevin James.
You know what? Hold on, I'm gonna pause this right here. I'm noticing a trend with this. It's a lot
or
of
Betty Gilpin.
All right, I don't even know who Betty Gilpin is. I'll look that up. But I want to note with the last three, they're all just fat comedians with fat white dudes, essentially, which I'm definitely taking note of and keeping that in my bank of sadness for later.
The woman who plays Liberty Bell in Glow.
What?
You know, the blonde.
Oh, I know what you mean. How?
I don't know, Chris. Why would Ryan Reynolds and J.K. Simmons go for the same role?
Like, it makes, like, when he goes to the first one, like, who plays Chris in the weekly manga recap movie? And he's like, Patton Oswalt, Jack Black, Kevin James. I'm like, yeah, I could see all three of those characters going for the same role. Betty Gilpin. It's like, I don't, very little connection between her and the rest. I feel like I'm like taking like a test, and it's like, which one of these three, four does it belong?
All right, Teching 101, Kevin Hart, Grant Gustin, Chris Pratt.
Hey, I'm gonna stop you right there. Grant Gustin is 100% perfect for Teching because he's just like, he's a good looking guy, but he's like that side of him where you're like, you're a nerd though. I can see you're a nerd. It's very evident to me, but you're like a pretty nerd. That fits very well to me.
Honestly, one of the weirdest parts of watching Death Note was occasions ago. I was like, this guy looks a little bit like Teching.
There were parts of that, yeah. I do feel like Teching is untapped in like the Hollywood market. I feel like he definitely should be like leading role somewhere or something.
That's a compliment, by the way, Teching. You're a weirdo, but you are like honestly kind of good looking.
Oh yeah, you're a scrumptious hottie boobalotti.
All right, Infamous Planet. David Tennant, because British, I guess. Anthony Hopkins. Gemma Chan. Bryan Cranston.
No. This is... at this point, he has to be fucking with us, right? Why is he putting one random super hot chick into these groups? Like...
She's English.
Like, her connection between... But Bryan Cranston isn't!
I know! Jacob Chapman. Neil Patrick Harris or Rob Schneider.
This has to be some very low key shade being thrown at us, and I'm just like it's taking me too long to get it. That or Andre came up with like one or two good options for all of us, and then was like, hey, fuck it, and just hit random on a celebrity name list.
Annalise Chrisman, Alison Brie,
okay,
Amy Poehler,
okay,
Emma Watson,
okay.
Kristen Shaw.
Why are hers all ones that like make sense? Like, why isn't hers having?
There's still
like,
a weird one there. You know, three comedy actors and then Emma Watson.
Yeah, but it's not as though it's like Alison Brie, Amy Poehler, Kristen Shaw, or fucking like Colin Powell. Like, it's not like it was like one
not
weird.
Even
just,
an
like,
actor.
Yeah, it's like where did this guy fit into it?
Well, so the question, I guess, was what are your thoughts on my choice? And I think that Chris has made his thoughts readily apparent.
Yeah, I'm fat and you just added a random hot chick to everybody's list. I got it loud and clear.
My thoughts are, I don't know how the fuck you came up with this, but good job.
Yeah, thanks.
Last rush from Andre Golden for this round.
Dear Chris, you're a big fat piece of shit. Why are you so ugly and no one loves you? I'm like, hey. Right.
Optimus Prime, the leader of the Autobots, and Megatron T. Transformers have been a big part of my life, and there's new Transformers out, so here's a big question. Which of the Bay's Transformers movies is the worst? I've only seen the first three Transformers movies, and I can say unequivocally that the third one is the worst. The second one was really, like, flinch-causing bad, but it was memorably bad. The third one was just boring.
I never watched the third one. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but, two was so horrendously bad, I tapped out of that series. Like, I enjoyed the first one and like, this is stupid, but it's kind of fun stupid, but the second one was just so bad. Just the fact that I had to watch, like, Stephen Tucci underneath a giant pair of Transformer testicles at one point in that movie was enough for me to be like,
it's not Stephen Tucci.
Or Stanley Tucci, isn't it?
No, that's John Turturro.
John Turturro? Wait, who am I thinking of then?
I don't fucking know.
Hold on, I had to look up Stanley Tucci then to think of who I'm mixing him up with. Oh yeah, I don't know why I thought Stanley Tucci was him. Yeah, John Turturro. Maybe his character has a name similar to that? That's weird. I think I had a stroke there just now, Nick.
I don't know. I think Stanley Tucci is in all the Transformers movies.
Was he? Maybe that was why.
Like in all of them.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, that second one was just horrendous. The third one's probably
not all of them. He was just in the last one, I guess. I think it was big news that he was.
Oh, maybe that's why I got mixed up in my head. Yeah, but the second one was just so bad. I didn't even watch the third one.
I mean, don't blame me.
Oh, so there's a second part to this question here. Dear Chris, which fat Transformer would you be? All right, I don't like any of these.
Right, we've got a big multi-part war coming up now.
This one is from Drew. says, Dear Nick and Chris, putting the A in Q&A edition since August 2015.
Not sure what that's supposed to mean, but all right.
I like it. Question one, are you comfortable?
I am comfortable. Thank you for asking.
I was a little more comfortable before the casting suggestions came out, but, you know.
I was more comfortable before which jump character would you cook and eat, so.
Oddly enough, I was more at ease after that. I was like, really, let's
go. I'm glad that I was able to answer this effectively. That giant mammoth looked delicious.
I can't wait to eat that elephant. Question two. I'm starting to get worried about when Unohana is going to show up again. Is Unohana dead and never coming back? Or do you think that whenever Kubo releases his next series, he's going to end the first chapter with something like the main character is going to go around a corner and then Unohana is just standing there and says something like, I'm back, bitch. Thus revealing that he's been playing the long, long game. That would be great.
I sincerely hope that's what happens.
That would be amazing if she's like, she doesn't like the fucking drop in the Britney Spears song with, I'm Unohana, bitch. I'm back. Question three. If you could pick one series that ran in Jump and has concluded to come back for a 6 to 12 chapter miniseries, what would you pick and what would you like to see it be about?
Gakuhotai
would be good. I'd love to see Crossmanage come back and do a 6 to 12 chapter mini arc that basically covers like that tournament that they were going to run through. I know they'd have to kind of speed through probably most of the matches.
Montage a lot of it, yeah.
To just get to the end. But I do wish that series had like a proper match ending that really got it all.
And they still don't hook up by the end.
Yeah. We just still get more shots of that one, the leader of the other team's ass looking in that bush again. question four, you're hired to help get the final arc of Bleach animated series because... Let's just say some crazy old rich guy wants to spend his money getting Bleach animated instead of doing something like, I don't know, giving puppies or candy or medicine to orphans. Sir, what you're suggesting is the Mitt Romney genie. This is already a thing that exists. It's if Mitt Romney genie showed up and just had nothing but money to offer for random whimsical hypotheticals. So Mitt Romney genie shows up, Nick, and you are hired to help get the final arc of Bleach animated. Do you stick to one chapter per episode or try to go to 2 to 3?
There's not enough in chapters of Bleach for it to be one chapter per episode.
There would be a lot of filler, like 90% filler.
It would be 5 minutes of opening, 5 minutes of ending, 10 minutes of flashbacks, and 5 minutes of action.
B, will you stick solely to the manga or you try to incorporate things to the anime like those three doll, mod, soul, plushy things?
Knowing how things went when they tried to incorporate those characters into canon parts of the anime, it was very obviously just kind of like slapped in for no reason. So I think that they would just be like, oh, no, they're off somewhere else doing nothing. There's already too many characters in Bleach to be concerned with filler characters that were supposed to stick around.
See, who would you hire to voice Yuwok? Just ask in case you guys decide not to voice him yourself, because personally, I think listening to you two and Johnny Young Bosch go back and forth would be great.
Well, since we're talking about an English voice actor, I actually, this is again, like, I've got My Hero Academia on the mind. Kuragiri's voice actor, Chuck Huber.
You know what's weird? Odd tidbit. I still have Johnny Young Bosch on Skype. I helped like coordinate an interview that I think Bennett the Sage and Jacob did with him way back in like early days of That Guy with the Glasses. And I had to add him on Skype because I was like the only person who had recording technology at that time.
Right.
So he's still on my Skype. He probably just doesn't sign on to it anymore. Just has never been like, I'm going to remove this loser. I don't know. I've always sit there and I'm just like, it's cool. I have celebrities on my Skype. Question five, you are approached by some sort of magical being who says that they will make it so World Trigger
returns. You mean Mitt Romney Genie, okay.
Mitt Romney Genie shows up and says he will make it so World Trigger return to Jump and restore Daisuke Ashihara to perfect help to complete it. The catch is you must pick one of the following conditions. It's back for 1 year before it concludes, but it's the best it has ever been, and when you do top 10 moments / chapters for the series, pretty much all of them come from here. Yes, it was Linkara and Jake, not Bennett and Jake, sorry. It's back for 3 to 5 years before it's done, and it's basically more of the same. The highest moments never really get higher than the series has been, but it never gets lower than it's been for the last couple arcs. C, The series is around as long as it takes to answer all the questions you have and for all the questions that new chapters make you ask. However, the series is never quite as good as it was before the break. When you do the top 10 moments / chapters, maybe one will come from these, but ultimately the series will have already reached its peak. Or D, you tell the being that you don't want to bring Honey World Trigger back, or you don't want to waste magical powers on it, and instead ask for the ability to summon a bottle of honey mustard, a box of brown sugar, cinnamon, Pop-Tarts to your hand, whatever you want. That's interesting. So, bring it back for only 1 year, but it is the absolute best thing possible.
So basically, do you want it to have a regular continuation? Do you want it to have a long, disappointing continuation? Do you want it to have a Samurai Jack finale? Or do you want to have honey mustard?
Do you want to have magic honey mustard and Pop-Tart summoning powers? You know, I know it's in there that Daisuke Ashihara is restored to perfect health to complete it, but I think I would take the idea of bring it back for 1 year before it concludes, just so Ashihara is kind of free from World Trigger after that. Like, it's the best it's ever going to be. It's amazing. It's an entire year of fantastic chapters. And then afterwards, he could presumably, you know, hopefully still work in manga, but then move on to, like, doing, like, a monthly series or something that's just easier on his workload, essentially. I think 3 to 5 years, and it's like it never hits a higher peak than what it's been at, would be great. I think World Trigger was still a fantastic series as it was. But I would love for like just an amazing year, and then you know, we have it completed and you can enjoy it, and then Ashihara can still be out there making great stuff.
I'm gonna go with 3 to 5 years because I'm selfish.
No, I totally understand it. And question
but not
six.
So selfish as to just take the Pop-Tarts.
You're like, I have money, please. Question six. The most important of all these questions for the two of you are the keepers of all the knowledge in the world about this particular subject. And the only source that we, the people, can turn to in these times to draw the knowledge and wisdom on this subject, which is vital to the continued happiness and that which is of great importance to us all.
Bling!
What is Gremmy's favorite color?
I looked up what the most popular favorite color in the world is. It's blue, so it's blue.
I would say white. That which is all colors and thus not a color. Or no, white is the absence of all colors. Yeah, that's it. So he has no favorite color.
Well, it depends on how you look at it, because if you use pigment, it can be other... It can be either white or black. Depending.
Okay.
Like, with white, it's... Never mind. Anyway.
Oh, well, actually, it might be blue, but he'll put a slight twist on it, so it's like light blue.
It's like the most boring shade of blue you can pop.
Yeah, that'd be it. To a T. Thank you for the questions, Drew. Right. Really good ones, and I liked it.
Questions come then from Mike. Hello, Chris and Nick, or for silly nicknames, Yuma Guiguai, Ruler of Tim... And one more tea.
Is Uncle too racist?
He's so racist.
Can I enjoy?
It's not racist,
can I enjoy him still? Like every time I try, like I feel like I quote him all the time to people, and I feel super racist doing it. And even when I link the video to people, I'm just like, one more thing. I'm always like, they don't know Jackie Chan, or they think I'm just linking like some super racist, like Adult Swim cartoon from the 2000s or something. They're like, is this an episode of Minority Team?
Oh boy. All right. Okay. I hope you guys are doing well. Thank you for the amazing content. Here's some questions I hope you enjoy. Number one, I enjoyed Nick's episode that you did on Speed Racer and was wondering if the both of you would either do a special episode on Patreon, reviewing TV, movie, etc. adaptations of manga and anime, or one-off episodes. We've done those occasionally. Most recently, we did the Death Note Netflix movie review. We did one for a One Piece movie. We did one for a Naruto movie. So for full-on, like, adaptation reviews and stuff, we occasionally do those for the bonus episodes on Patreon. So there you go.
And every so often, we'll also do them for commentaries, too. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned to either commentaries or bonus pods. We usually throw them in there.
Yeah. Question two, hypothetical question time. Say you both somehow have the opportunity to play editor, or at least suggest the next type of manga that Oda, Kishimoto, Kubo, etc. do. What would you like them to do based on their strengths, weaknesses, and interests, and why? Also, you can't just say robots or Oda, as he has stated, he would like to do that already.
Damn, I really wanted that.
horror manga for Kubo.
Yeah, that probably would fit right into his wheelhouse. I almost want to take Oda slightly out of this original wheelhouse and maybe move him differently. I kind of almost want him to do like a comedy manga. Like he started his initial first like one-offs were comedy manga. But I don't know if a pure comedy one would interest him entirely. So I imagine almost start something like Hitman Reborn or Beelzebub, like a comedy series that eventually starts to have like a battle manga direction to it. After a while, I think that would maybe be the best thing for Oda. Kishimoto, maybe he would just be like best to give him, like, I know he did that baseball manga that I thought was complete garbage, Bench. Oh, so bad. But, I think Bench, kind of showed that he does have definitely an interest for it. So, like, he's already shown that he does like having teams and team aspects to his series. So I think a sports manga still would be really good for him.
All right, number three. If you can assemble a team of Digidestined comprised of all the Shonen Jump characters and give them a partner to Timon and Crest... Okay, no, I'm not. That would take too long, and I wouldn't do that to you guys. Actual Thank number you. Three. What is your favorite tournament arc, whether it finished or not?
It feels cheating to say the Kanto tournament in Eye Shield, because that's not really an arc as much as it is a saga, since it's, what, like probably 100 chapters of that series, or maybe... more.
You mean from the one starting against like the Naga science
going no sorry
oh that one
is that the that's a Kanto tournament
that arc, is the Kanto it? One you're right
yeah, yeah it's starting essentially with the Nagas and going all the way through the dinosaurs.
They refer to that as an arc, I believe, in the manga. So it's Kanto so, tournament arc start or something like that.
It's so long. Yeah, but I feel like it's cheating. That's a saga, I feel like, in almost anything else. But
I think it's splitting hairs.
Yeah, I'll go with that tentatively. Outside of that, the Dark Tournament arc in Yu Yu Hakusho is pretty great.
School Festival arc in My Hero Academia.
That's another really good one.
Black Clover Gold Royal Knights exam up until the ending.
Yeah, I was like the first half of that one. That was pretty great. All right. From Emperor...
Dayan.
Sorry, I think there was an explanation after more, and yeah. I got confused. Sorry, after Dan. Dear Nicholas Y. Ryu of the Haidu and Rolo T. Hawk. I believe T. Hawk, is that Street Fighter?
I mean, Ryu is Street Fighter, and he uses Hadouken, so I assume that T. Hawk is sort of fighting game reference.
I'm confused because both Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat both have very super racist stereotype Native American characters in their games, and I'm forgetting what both of their names are. I know Nightwolf is the Mortal Kombat one, but I don't play much Street Fighter, so I can't remember if that's T. Hawk or not. Given the amount of card games that have anime or manga associated with them, what would you imagine anime or manga based on Hearthstone to be like? Oh, this is so great. I love this. To give more of a basis, it can't be, fuck you, Nick. It can't be a straight adaptation of the Warcraft story or lore. It has to involve the card game being played in the series proper. This is tough. See, a very specific element of Hearthstone that, like, is kind of core to it is that random effects happen all the time. It's a digital card game, so they could do things like summon a random copy of a card from your deck, you know, that you couldn't do in like an actual card game because you just wouldn't have the availability for that. So essentially every duel would have to play out like a Joey duel where it's like, I'm gonna risk it all on this one play, go 1 in 19 shot, and he just rolls a dice and he ends up lucky every time. But that has to happen all the fucking time in Hearthstone. Which actually I think would make for a great series, because Hearthstone is a fantastic series, like, game to play if you're able to enjoy the ludicrous, like, randomness of it at times. When you're just like, alright, I basically have this game won, as long as this guy doesn't roll, like, as long as he doesn't get the one card option out of this random thing that's gonna pop up out of, like, 39 options. Ah, fucking goddammit, he did, and he won. Or just, like, randomness like that. It would almost have to be, like, not like a, you could do it as a dramatic series, because it would be, There'd be no way to build up a credible threat in the series where the villain's like, and now I'll play this card and it has a 1 in 9 shot of winning me the game. But then I would love it. It would just be a series with a lot of goofy laughs to it. Almost like what Food Wars is to Cookie Manga, where you're just like, it has to kind of take the piss out of itself, I guess, at times. As for a plot, I think you just make it like a parody of the world, like the Warcraft stuff, because everything in it's so goofy and kind of like over the top, exaggerated. I dig it, though. Thank you for the question. Yeah, you
fell asleep there. Okay. Where were we? All right. You were answering something about a game I don't play. All right. Yeah. Okay. Next questions come from Matt Haxar Shaw. Dear Nick and Chris, uno coche bama por favor. There's a long list of advice here about Chris. Please do not order an Irish car bomb when you're actually in Ireland. Because,
oh yeah. I would very definitely not order it in a place over there. Honestly, I probably shouldn't even order it in Spain, but I in my mind, I was like, maybe it's a more universal drink than I thought.
Nope. Questions, though. Nick, you mentioned you liked Eurometal, and so do I. What do you think of the band Edguy or Avantasia, and do you have any recommendations of bands you enjoy? First of all, thank you very much for that recommendation. I listened to Ghost Lights right before we record this, and that thing is fucking awesome, so I'll definitely check out more. I know that Avantasia is kind of weird because he's gotten like a bunch of different singers to contribute to it, so I'm sure that every song is going to sound a bit different, but it was really, really cool, so I'll definitely check out more. For recommendations, I listened to a group called Rhapsody, which they are becoming Rhapsody of Fire, but then eventually, like, they switched from their lead singer, so I don't think that they're really making anything as good anymore, but they were one of my favorite groups for a long time. When I was trying to see if there were any, like, Danish groups, again, I'm Danish, that I would enjoy, I ended up discovering a group called Iron Fire. I like a few of their songs, ended up finding them through one called Leviathan. Then Ailstorm is really awesome. You should definitely listen to Ailstorm. It's really fun.
Pirate metal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Like, almost all of their songs have to do with drinking, and I enjoy them despite not drinking.
Despite having flashback, Vietnam-esque flashbacks to cutting yourself in that car bomb.
Oh,
glass.
No!
Help!
Chris, if a rock opera based around Queen songs can exist, then anything goes. So, imagine Phil Collins decides one day that he needs a manga based around his work and life and is taking suggestions. What would you pitch for this?
It's definitely going to be a comedy series because Phil Collins has a great sense of humor to himself and there's a lot of room for it. I almost imagine it like a little bit of a skip beat in a way where like, that was like the story of this girl, like going through all these like acting careers. And there was like the side stuff involving like her love from relationships. And I kind of imagine like a similar aspect to that where it's like Phil Collins going out and making all this music. But then there's like a side thing of him like falling in love and romance. And then, you know, a bunch of people being like, is that song about you watching someone die and drowning?
No, it's a song about his relationship.
It's like,
idiots.
It's about my divorce, man. Come on. And
it's
then.
Metaphor.
Yeah, but it starts off kind of like weird because that's, you know, early Genesis before Phil Collins took over for it. Back when Peter Gabriel was in it. Then it gets, you know, a lot more goofy and fun and lighthearted. Then it gets, you know, kind of wistful as, you know, Phil Collins goes off solo. And then it kind of like falls off for a bit. He's hurt. He's old. But it has this Logan-like return where Phil Collins comes back and he has this amazing performance and he can still do it. And... he finishes it by putting a cross on the ground and then he turns it sideways like an X. It's off into the distance.
Oh, I thought you were going to make a Tarzan reference.
No.
So that's fine.
No, he's carrying his Emmy he won on the, or Oscar he won on the way out while he does it, but it essentially ends like Logan. Oh my God. Sorry, I got very distracted by that. It's a great series. I love it. You'd love it as well.
Out of context, that moment in the movie, I guess, is really weird and goofy.
It is.
I was too busy crying to actually.
It was one of the first questions I remember asking when I left the theater. I was like, was that moment at the end way too dorky? Like, in an otherwise, like, movie, like, that doesn't try to, like, build itself into comic booky stuff too much and tries to just be, like, a serious story about, like, a warrior in his last days. Just ended with her being like, I'm going to desecrate this cross to make it an X. Like, all right, sure.
All right. And finally, for both of you, apparently two wrongs don't make a right, but I don't think that's really true. So can you take aspects of two manga series you hate and combine them into something much better? If so, what makes them work better together? For example, and feel free to use this one, Usagi Gear, which is Usagi Drop and Air Gear. I cannot see any way that that could actually make either of them better. The main problem that I had with Usagi Drop was that it suddenly became weirdly sexual between the father and daughter, and Air Gear is almost nothing but weird sex stuff.
Yeah.
So, that's a bad idea.
Combine two series together.
Two bad series together.
Two bad series, okay.
In order to make them better. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of like blinded by that suggestion and how bad an idea I think it is.
I'm just trying to think how many bad series out there I think has
There's definitely something to this as a concept, though. I mean, like, a lot of the bad series that we've talked about, there is definitely something that the author probably had a strong suit to it that in all likelihood actually was the reason why I kept going. I honestly think that for all its faults that Freezing actually had the makings of what could have been a good series. It was just that it was, you know, executed poorly. Like there were a bunch of ideas that were good in concept that then ended up getting done badly.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it kind of comes down to, the problem I have is that so many of the series I'm thinking about that I'm like, oh, this was bad, but there's one aspect we changed. It all kind of comes down to a lot of the same aspects of, like, the characters were written to be really stupid or really bad or really sexualized. Like, when you get down to Cage of Eden kind of could have worked if you just took out all the attempted rape. How would I combine that with that was the problem in Freezing 2. I'm like, oh, that would be the problem in Mayatome as well. Like, that's the problem in this series and that series. I'm like, a lot of them had the same, yeah. Even like Fairy Tales to a certain extent. I'm like, I really can't find a way to just easily solve this.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
All right, let's just go into, interesting stuff here. Thank you. I like the variety there.
Question from Loon Rama Yasha. Hey there, I summon Y the Time Wizard in attack mode. Flip a coin, call it right, and destroy all monsters on my opponent's field. And I choose you, Rollo T! Use Rollout! Oh no, it doesn't affect Time Wizard because it levitates, and because it's a dual monster, not a Pokemon.
Levitation makes ground attacks miss, not rock attacks.
It's silliness. Also, Time Wizard doesn't have a levitation effect. He just happens to hover, but that's not always a guaranteed truth that all Pokemon who actually, you know, sprite-wise levitate.
If you look closely at the two monsters in your example.
Technically, there are some versions of Magnemite that don't have levitate. That's why they give it the move Magnet Rise so that it could avoid ground-based attacks.
Worst jokes ever.
I like that it also came in with the happy Halloween / Thanksgiving / Christmas. It's got to be close to one of those, right? It's like, it was. Question one. Have you guys mentioned how you rarely read horror manga that you truly find scary? Have you ever been scared while reading a manga before, or do you think that the comics medium can't elicit fearful feelings as well as other mediums?
I've definitely been unsettled while reading some manga, but very, I don't think I can think of a single instance where I was reading something and I went, oh, holy shit,
I think we brought this up at one point. I think it may have even been last year during Halloween. I think it was when we did like a Fujin no Tani or whatever. It was that one that was like a collection of like really short stories, like 4 pages long. The medium of like manga or comic books in general, it is somewhat difficult to capture fear effectively because it only has one aspect to really work with, which is visual. And it is tough for them at times to fully capture that, especially when you're looking at a whole page. You can kind of easily see everything that's on that page at once. It doesn't work for, I think, what we kind of see as traditional horror, you know, your creepy series sort of thing that has these big monsters in it or jump scares or stuff like that. You know, there's that adage that the best fear is kind of psychological, that some of the scariest stuff out there isn't scary because it has this, you know, terrifying nature to it, but because it's off. Like that was, what was it recently I just read? The Shining, like how an element is in there that when Jack's first talking to the owner, he's at the office, the office manager's room, and you can see a window in the background. But later when they lay out the like hotel layout, the office is in a, like, encapsulated, it's like inside the building, surrounded by just walls on all sides. It doesn't face outside at all. And that's an element that kind of plays to the horror, because you're like, that's off. There's something surreal about that. That's weird, you know? And then there's just series or, you know, movies or whatever that are going to base it solely on letting you create the fear, letting you fill in the blanks, you know, your Blair Witch Project or things of that kind of nature that kind of let you create the villain of it. I'm sure there are manga out there that can capture this very well. I just think we haven't read them because the horror manga we tend to pick up are more, there's this ghost girl and she's going to kill everybody. But I think like one example of this that maybe is works, we didn't really play it like it was a horror manga, but Homunculus is a series I think that is really good at creating that, just because it creates this foreboding dread of like this guy's sanity slowly slipping away as he kind of jumps into this paranormal stuff. And there's very much an uncertainty regarding what he's doing at that point. I think that's a better example of what the medium of manga could do for horror than, say, Ibitsu.
Yeah, I agree. There are definitely some things that you can do with still images, still drawings specifically, that you can't do with anything else. And so stuff that plays to those strengths is probably where manga is what manga horror would be best at. Which sometimes doesn't actually lead to being specifically frightened, just kind of disturbed.
Yeah. Question two, what is an experience you've had reading manga that you are most thankful for? Experience reading manga. I mean, obtusely, or I guess maybe not obtusely, but like in a larger scale, I'm thankful for manga because it allowed me to meet Nick and have this show and have an awesome audience and, you know, be able to do all these crazy awesome things like that. Like, I think those are really thankful things. But if you're referring to an experience localized entirely within reading a series, there's so many. There's a lot of series I've had just fantastic times reading. You know, Eyeshield, Death Note, One Piece.
You can honestly probably gauge this just by, like, listening to the stuff that we've, like, recapped on the show. Like, moments that we just kind of gush over. It's really difficult to pick out a single one in that regard, because it's like, hey, I mean, this is something that we like doing in general, and then there are going to be the times where there is just an exceptionally good instance where we just kind of freak out over it. If to go more in the line of Chris's first answer, the first time I started reading Bleach, honestly, because that's the first time I started really reading manga, and I would not have read all the stuff and done all of the things associated with it if I hadn't done that. So there you go.
Yeah. Question three. Many anime and manga series have Christmas specials / chapters. What is your favorite ones of those you've seen or read?
The Fairy Tale Christmas special, where Ursa makes everyone get naked and then wanders the streets naked, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she just sexually assaults all of her guildmates.
Literally everyone.
Including the underage ones.
That's the best one. I mean, come on, guys, seriously.
It might have to by default, because I really can't think of another one. Even that Pokemon Christmas episode didn't air here because it involved Jinx, who was super blackface at the time. Yeah, another one's hey, not really
oh, come on, Chris,
mind.
Don't you remember the one where Ash and his Pokemon nearly die in the cold?
I remember getting weirdly over-analytically excited about that one because it had Charmander in her and he already had Charizard by that point.
He evolved into Charizard.
I was like,
did he de-evolve?
Yeah, I was like, Ash got a de-evolution potion, like the one from the Pokemon card game and uses on Charizard.
Exactly what I thought was going to happen too.
Nick, another connection.
I literally remember, and I, do you know why I thought that? It was because not that I saw that episode, but because I saw the moment from that episode featured in a music video.
Yes, 100%. Yes. It's because it was in that music video. You saw Charmander, you're like, man, at some point he must use the de-evolution potion on Charizard.
My theory was that Charizard actually went and bought one so that he could use it on himself because he missed getting along with his trainer. And I remember actually theorizing that with my, with, you know, the people who also watch Pokemon at school.
And they were like,
so yeah, if you want an instance where like, are there, do you have any moments that reading manga that you're most thankful for? Yes, because we have moments like that because of manga.
Exactly. Four, what is the best manga related gift you've ever received? So the, when we first made that mention that the Shonen Jump podcast mentioned us on their, show, I remember I sent an email out to them just saying like, hey, thanks for the mention. It's really great. We love Jump and everything we could do to support it. And Jump actually sent us like a box of like some stuff that was basically like, hey, thanks, you know, for doing what you do and everything that comes along with it. And I actually, one of the things that was in there was a poster, that it's a dual side one. It's one of the ones I think comes in a regular Jump issues generally in Japan. And one side of the poster is that like all the swimsuit girls of Jump, basically the one that, the artist from Food Wars drew. But the other side is a One Piece double like color page. And I actually framed that with the note that they sent along because it was a very cool gesture. And it was something I was very proud of. It was one of those moments. I'm like, oh, this podcast is really kind of doing something very awesome about it. So, I really, it's one of those things I kind of treasure deeply. Also, it helps fill up wall space. I'm really bad at like decorating. I'm terrible interior decorating. So I was like, this helps not make everything blank walls.
I got a cool Zeraki keychain out of that.
And although it's not actually, it's not manga related, I'm back in the day, I got a, plushie of, one of the base Heartless from Kingdom Hearts made that I still have. It's actually like right behind me. It's near the, Captain America stand that I have. And it's something I always thought was super cool. It's essentially a custom made, you know, Heartless plushie. I think it's cool. And question five, this one is not holiday related, so we won't answer it. Goodbye. Thanks for the question, Zubarasha. Now, I made an anti-piracy rap video a while ago, and at the end of it, I challenged you guys, Jeff Rubert and Maxine Bernard, to each do the same. It's probably been 5 months now. By the time you read this, when are you guys going to bust those rhymes?
No.
The only way I could think to do it is if I took a John Cena rap song and just changed lyrics up slightly, so I'll see if I can get to that. Honestly, I'm not a freestyler. I have very little rhythm.
You're like a broken needle, kid, man. You're missing the point.
Like a broken needle, kid. You're missing the point. We dominate you off, man. Yeah, that's great. Like the big dick, Nick, nobody can finish me. I have one John Cena song on my iPod, and it's the Boston sports anthem, basically, that they did.
Jesus Christ.
It's full of so many specifically Boston sports references, but Boston sports references circa 2005, so they're extremely dated now.
Yeah.
But I love it still. Yo, we make it the steel curtain look like Venetian blinds. It's great.
Oh, God. With the mic in my hands, I'm a bad man. I'm a bad man.
We're bumping knuckles.
Oh, God. There's so much of that freaking album that's so lamely, amazingly awesome.
It's a shocking album in that it's not worse than it is. It's like, this isn't god-awful. I'm really stunned by that.
All right. God, this is going to be a weird one. Another email from Andre Golan. Dear Doctor Who, the Ruler of Time, and Rose Tyler T., with the recent announcement of the 13th Doctor, I'm in a Doctor Who mood. So I got some Doctor Who questions for you. Which version of the Doctor is your favorite? Who's your favorite companion? Who's your favorite villain?
I don't watch it.
Rowan Atkinson. Okay.
Yeah, enjoy your fucking nerd show, losers.
Okay. From,
Satellite of Love. Sorry, I was used to the idea that when we got an Andre Golan question, there were like six.
There'll be another one.
Yeah, so Satellite of Love here. Dear Nick.
Nick,
what? And Chris. I don't know what these are supposed to be.
Hello, beans.
Did my computer break? trying to look at that. Like, is this a language I understand? My demon language needs work. Anyway, here are a couple Promised Neverland related questions. One, would Ray's baby memories be Promised Neverland's dumbest plot point? I thought so, but since it was hardly consequential in retrospect, I just kind of laugh it off. Can you think of any other series like that, a story that you enjoyed that is strange, that is a strange, questionable, but funny plot point? We've definitely, like, referenced it, I'm sure, throughout time, but, like, in a moment's notice, I'm trying to think if I can, like, come up with one of those. Mm-hmm. Ichigo is too strong and is only getting stronger and may never be able to return to the world of living after this. It's a good one. Although I guess that was maybe not a fun one since it was pretty stupid at the time. Chad, and just
you
never got
say things that you don't mean. Yeah, it is kind of hard to think of those. Things where it's like, it seems like a really important but weird plot point is being brought up, and then all of a sudden it doesn't ever come up.
You know what? Another great one, Mars going to brainwash the king of the Diamond Kingdom. There's a part of me that's like, we may never get a resolution to that. It may totally be left off on the idea of him being like, I'm going to go brainwash the king of a kingdom, and this is a good thing. This is always a heroic deed. Goodbye.
Naruto's Resin Shuriken when he first developed it, because they set it up that if he used it too much, it could permanently damage the nerves in his hand, and they immediately got around that by learning how to throw it.
Yeah. That is an odd point.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about it. You brought it up. Question two. If Gremmy was the fourth protagonist of Promised Neverland with all of his powers, how would he help Emma, Ray, and Norman escape the Gracefield home? Would it involve fire or a big rock or both?
It would involve he would make a second himself, which would frustrate Emma and Ray because then they were like, now we just have to have someone else that we have to rescue and feed.
His plan to escape is to just make a really big door. He's like, I've conjured up a way out of here. They're like, this just takes us outside. We can leave the literal home, you fucking idiots.
I've got guys, I'll invent another home for us to live in. How do we move the house? Is it going to be on wheels? Is it going to be like Howl's Moving Castle? What? Houses can't move. What are you talking about?
It's like a house that flies? Guys, no, we're talking about something possible. They're like, your ability transcends possible.
Let's be realist here. And he just goes inside his new house and shuts the door.
Just made a second Gracefield house. They're like, now we have two moms. You imagine a second mom. He's like, hey, nothing's perfect.
I helped.
Poe Buddy's nerfed. Slam. They're going to eat you. You're nothing but a brain. You're going to be the most delicious one of them all. thank you.
He actually, like, fails every test that he takes. He just imagines that he got it perfect.
Oh, he's like the plot to Third Grade Mystery Mountain where Polly just made up the answers and then changed history to make sure she was right.
He's like that one episode of Fairly Odd Parents where Timmy Turner just like, 49? And the Dakotas merge. He like, actually, they get the test results in and it's like, well, for some reason, all of these answers are wrong, yet somehow he still got 270 out of 300. So you're saying that he somehow made it so he got right answers? Yes. Why don't he just give himself a perfect score? It's like, oh, come on, that would be asking for too much. You got to be realistic here. Yeah. Otherwise, it'll arouse suspicion.
There's a limit to how amazing his psychic powers can be.
More stuff from Andre Gold, and I'll do these ones back to back. Dear Tobey Maguire, the ruler of Spider-Man, and Andrew Garfield T., I recently saw Spider-Man Homecoming, and I'm in a web-slinging mood. So I've got Spider-Man questions. Number one, have you watched any Spider-Man cartoons? Yes. I watched a little bit of Ultimate Spider-Man, the one where he goes to the alien planet, but not a whole lot of it. I don't remember it being especially good. I watched a lot of the 90s Spider-Man cartoon when I was a kid. And I also watched some episodes of the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends series where he had a Firestar and Iceman that he teamed up with.
I watched some of the 90s cartoon. Very little. It was like kind of the redheaded stepchild in between the Batman animated show and the 90s X-Men show in like terms of being like a superhero show on during that time. And, Superman was like the kid from Home Alone. You forgot it existed until it like had a crossover essentially. But I saw a couple episodes of that. They were okay.
Hmm. Number two, how would you rank the Spider-Man movies from worst to best?
All right. Amazing Spider-Man 2. Amazing Spider-Man. Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man Homecoming.
What about... Oh, okay. So you actually like Spider-Man 3 a lot compared to some of them, then.
I mean, it's... basically, the Spider-Man... Like, Amazing Spider-Man ones were both really bad. I guess maybe Spider-Man... Yeah, no, I think they're both worse than the Sam Raimi trilogy altogether. And in between... Of the Sam Raimi trilogy, I think 3 is better than 2. I did not like 2.
Wow. It's been a while since I've seen the first two Spider-Man movies. I imagine that they haven't aged very well. But I don't remember them especially well, honestly. I also have not yet seen Spider-Man Homecoming, so this is going to be an incomplete list. So I'm going to actually say Spider-Man 3, then Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2, then Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man. I really like The Amazing Spider-Man. I know that it's got, like, the worst fucking villain in it, but I really like Andrew Garfield, and I really like Emma Stone in their roles. So, there you go.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like I'm being harsher to The Amazing Spider-Man 1 than I need to be, but... You know what? Actually, okay, I will put that over Spider-Man 2, I guess.
If you really dislike it, then... Yeah.
Spider-Man, hey, why would Dr. Octopus give his fucking robot arm sentience? Why do they have a mind of their own with a chip in the back that he points at? He's like, should this be destroyed, my arms will go haywire and try to kill me. Like, why would that be a feature?
No, don't you see? We have to do this.
It's fucking stupid.
All right. Second... Oh, wait, there's also a favorite Spider-Man villain question on this part.
I mean, Venom is one of my favorites, but I think one that I really like and I feel like he does not get appreciated enough is Mysterio. I love Mysterio as a villain. I think he's just such a cool concept. And I think he's so perfect for, like, movies that I'm stunned we haven't gotten him yet. I know he was, like, the rumored Spider-Man 4 with Bruce Campbell playing him, but... Like, the idea of a...
What ideal casting, jeez.
Yeah, they'd even, I guess, put the groundwork in for him. Like, there were teases of him throughout the movies, like small Easter eggs. And just the idea of, like, a villain who was a special effects artist in today's day of huge, big-budget special effects movies. Like, it's fucking perfect. Like, I'm stunned we haven't gotten to that point yet.
I don't know if you've ever played any of the Spider-Man video games, but he... shows up in the video game adaptation of Spider-Man 2, and he is hilarious.
I love him. There was Avengers Academy was a game I was playing for a little bit, essentially like fucking high school, or I guess college, like Marvel. And one of their big things is like any villains you recruit get heroic storylines, because it would be kind of fucked up to have serial killers walking around your campus. And so most villains, they have kind of like their story is their redemption arc. And Mysterio, I thought, was a really cool one, where it's like, I kind of just want to be an entertainer. Like, that's all I really want to do. And he learns how he can use his powers for good. And it's a cool thing. I liked him.
There's the way that his appearance works in Spider-Man in the video game is, pardon me. He first shows up, like, you know, he has, like, this stuff that he basically tries to expose Spider-Man, and Spider-Man completely humiliates him, so his schemes get bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually, like, he makes the Statue of Liberty look like a statue of himself and stuff, and you defeat him at that point. And then, later on, you just encounter him just robbing a convenience store, and... So he turns to face you, and this, like, bar of his health appears at the top of the screen, and it fills up across the entire screen 3 times. He proceeds to just float there doing nothing until you attack him once, and the entire bar goes to 0.
Aww.
Because he's got none of his special effects to beat you with. You just have to beat him.
You just have to punch him once. He's like, I love Mysterio. He's such a fun villain concept.
One that I think that also is incredibly underrated is Shocker. Who is just a guy who robs banks, but he's got a shock suit. Doesn't get into the personal vendettas, and there is a Spider-Man and the versus the Sinister Six DOS game that I played as a kid. And one of the ending routes is actually that you team up with him to take down the rest of the six, because he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. There's no more in this for me. So
Spider-Man is definitely right alongside, I think, Batman for like the best rogues gallery of villains. Like, there's just a really good group of characters there with a lot of different complex personalities.
I think that's one of the reasons why the animated series was so why the animated series in general have been so successful, is because there's such a wide variety of different villains you can build episodes around between, you know, the ones that are just for Spider-Man, or also the ones that he tends to be put up against, like the Kingpin and stuff like that. So many different possibilities.
Lizard's a great one, you know, villain who doesn't want to be one, essentially like Hulk, but a more twisted, like, like, purely the Hulk parts of it, like, villainous kind of side of him. Kraven the Hunter, I think, is a really unique one. Somebody who's like, my sole goal in life is to kill you now because you're the greatest hunt, you know. Venom, just to give you a pure, like, I'm evil, you and stronger. You know, you got your Joker kind of thing with the Green Goblin. Scientist and Dr. Octopus. It's just a fantastic gallery.
And the Chameleon, too.
Yeah.
There's a weird one. Second one from Andre Golden here. Dear Lana Loud, the Ruler of Time, and Lola Loudy, Loud House references, I don't watch the show, but okay. I hope that you don't find me being predictable, because I hate being predictable, so here's a question for Nick. I want to hear your opinion on Descendants! And have you seen Descendants 2? P.S. Have you two watched Grey's Anatomy?
So I'll answer the only part of this question I can, and no, I have not watched Grey's Anatomy, so much so I knew of Grey's Anatomy via, like, osmosis of pop culture. I literally thought the two doctors on the show were called McSteamy and McDreamy. I was like, that's so goofy. Why? Like, it's supposed to be a serious drama, but there's a doctor called McDreamy on it. I didn't realize those were just, like, Entertainment Tonight nicknames for the two of them.
I have never seen Grey's Anatomy, and I have not seen Descendants 2. But a couple of years ago, I watched Descendants and was like tweeting my experience of it. It's amazingly bad. Just holy shit. Just some of the most stupid. It doesn't make any goddamn sense. Like, I think that every decision that was made for it in terms of the story was a bad one. And whoever was responsible for actually coming up with the interpretations of characters, or, you know, inspirations for the cast and stuff like that, just made every bad decision you could possibly make. There are occasional glimpses of, oh, no, that was an interesting idea here and there. Like, there's a touch where, like, Jafar's son in the movies has resorted to stealing in order to help provide for his dad. It's like, oh, there you go. He's like Aladdin because of the circumstances that they're in. That's interesting. But then there's just, like, stuff like, okay, some of them don't want to be evil or something like that. And, or, each of them learns to be good through the movie in a different way. One is through love, and one is through finding their potential, and stuff like that. Cruella's kid just learns that dogs are nice. That's his arc.
And you hate that because you vehemently disagree with that assessment?
No, has nothing to do with it. Literally, like, his mother has convinced him that dogs are horrible and cruel and scary, and a dog comes up to him and is friendly to him, and one of the guys is like, oh, he just wants to lick you and befriend you. And he's like, oh, dogs are okay. That's it.
I guess these things aren't as bad as I thought after all.
That's literally his
heart. It's so weird to me that
for a guy that was doing this coordinated dance number set to dubstep with them going, I'm rotten to the core. So that's why he's not evil anymore, is because he learned that dogs aren't scary.
It's weird to me as well that, like, in this pantheon of Disney villains, kids, that it's just like, it's like, oh, Captain Hook's kid, Ursula's kid, fucking, just Scar's kid. And it's like, and this chick who used to try to want to make dogs into coats. Like, it's like a really smaller scale. Like, who lets you into this group? Like, not that I don't love Cruella de Vil, but
yeah, the original,
there's a reason why at the, like, villain round table in the first Kingdom Hearts game, Cruella de Vil is not at it.
The original four in that movie were, the Wicked Queen from Snow White, Jafar, and Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty. So, you know, three different sorcerers, basically, and a woman who wants to make a fur coat.
Yeah, that's a weird scale.
And there, and another thing, like the kingdom of all the good people and stuff is ruled by Belle and the Beast. But Beast is a human now, but he's just called King Beast.
Okay.
There's so many weird little decisions that are just like, well, this is the marketed term used for them. So that's like, so many characters have like forgotten lessons that they learned during their most important legendary tale. They've done a horrible job of raising their kids because the kids have to like fulfill like the bratty role or the jock role or stuff like that. Like, I think that the stereotypical jock is like Prince Charming and Cinderella's kid. And it's like, how the hell does this guy not understand, you know, knowing the value of where you are in life and knowing the value of people beneath you when he was fucking raised by Cinderella?
She's really gotten used to that glass slipper lifestyle now.
Uh-huh. It's all out of order, too, in terms of plot points and plot developments. There's a thing where you're supposed to see that, like, what is her name? Evilana or Evelina, who is the evil Wicked Queen's... She's just called Evil Wicked Queen. She doesn't have an actual name. She, like, is cheating using a magic mirror in class because they're going to high school, because of course they are. She uses a magic mirror to cheat, and then she learns that she actually is smart. But there's a moment in between that where you learn that she actually is smart. But just, yeah, it's all messed up in terms of everything. And it's a really, really bad movie, even for what it is.
All right. Good question there. Let's move on to, I don't see a name here.
Nope.
Redbane, I think, we gotten some from Redbane before. Dear comrades, is your Ray impersonation intentionally or unintentionally just like Spacey, Lumpy Space Princess from Adventure Time?
Well, Chris was the one who came up with it initially, so unintentionally there.
Unintentionally. I've never seen Adventure Time. No. I know nothing about that show.
But when you started doing it, I took it in the direction of Lumpy Space Princess kind of on purpose. Lumpy Space Princess is basically a lot like Ray, except with a lot more self-hatred thrown in, that conflicts with an ego. It's a very bizarre, character.
There you go. That was a pretty short one, so I'll just jump into the next one real quick here.
Mm-hmm.
From the Great Rapsode, hey, Nick, with a carrot nose, dog, Freeman, and Chris, he who wields a sword must now become a master, Larius. So this time, you've just ended Fairy Tail to reviewed Rave Master. Yeah, just recently.
Just.
So I have some questions for you. First question, what did you think of Shuda, the first member of the Erasion Six? I thought he had a good build-up, and his fight with Haru was done really well. I liked Suda a lot. I like that the Erasion Six kind of got this initial introduction of just one member going up against them, and he kind of like crushed him. And I thought he had a really cool power and his ability to kind of just create explosions anywhere. And I like that he got his own real arc to him too. He eventually kind of started to turn against the bad guys and kind of became an anti-hero in the end. I think he's kind of like, I guess, a prototypical Gajeel in that way. And that eventually he kind of learned from being beaten and became a good guy. Nothing from you, Nick?
Nope, not okay. Really. I literally almost everything about Raid Master kind of went in one ear and out the other. Very little of it actually stuck.
Second question, which wacky sidekick from either Fairy Tail or Rave would you want to live with?
None.
Najima, I believe, was the sunflower on the side of the house. He seemed like just a cool dude. Like, he seemed like he was looking out for you. Like, I imagine if, like, my alarm went off and, like, I woke up and turned it off then went back to sleep, and he would be like, Christopher, wake up! Your alarm! Like, he's wacky. I think he was Jamaican in the dub, too, so give me that to it, too. But I think he'd be great. I would have to question every day. I'm just like, what are you? Third question. I personally love the Blue Guardians arc in Ravemaster because how it balances the plot and cast, but to the point, it almost feels like a One Piece arc. Was there an arc in Ravemaster that pleasantly surprised you in terms of quality? I'm trying to think. I don't know if you'd even call it an arc. The Erasion 6 arc, I thought, worked really well. I guess that kind of works just because of how uniquely separate it feels in the grand scheme of things would be the whole mermaid arc. I guess, I don't know if you'd call it the ogre arc. He was the bad guy in that. But You know, it was something that connected to the grand story of Rave Master, but it didn't try to, like, speed itself up. It wasn't like, hey, we gotta take down this guy because he's one of the five Darkbring or Masterbring or whatever they were. We just gotta get this guy and beat him. Like, it was its own self-contained kind of thing that just event, like, kind of continued to build the world. And that's, I think, one of the things One Piece does well. It's like, hey, we're doing an arc on just Doflamingo. We're handling Doflamingo now. You know, we'll tease some other stuff, but Doflamingo's gonna get proper time and focus. So I think that was, pretty cool. Fourth question. In Fairy Tail, there was a villain named Rusty Rose who had the power known as Arc of Embodiment, which allowed his imagination to take real form. Something I liked about this was the Arc's power was limited to only being able to create things from his imagination like monsters, whereas imagination powers like Grammy is he literally can warp reality to fit his imagination like turn Yachiro's bones into cookies. Do you think that this limitation of only being able to create is good when dealing with something that seems OP like imagination powers?
Powers in general are more interesting when there is some sort of limits on them. That's one of the reasons why I think My Hero Academia works so well is that the quirks always have something weird about them that's a limit. You know, it's always established as like, you know, quirks are like physical abilities. There is a limit to them. You run out of being able to use them, for example, or the characters will have, you know, it's like, he can da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but if he uses it too much, then da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, like Kaminari fries his own brain, or if, oh gosh, I almost screwed his name up. If Shoto doesn't use both of his powers in balance, then he'll like freeze his body because he's not warming himself back up.
Yeah.
So, stuff like that. I think that if you have a really, really powerful ability, then there's got to be something that kind of holds it back in order to make it interesting. Usually it's, you know, lack of experience being able to get used to it. That's, you know, one of the things that makes Deku's development so great is that, you know that he's going to be one of the strongest heroes in the world one day, but his body can't handle it. He doesn't, you know, understand how to utilize it properly. He's got to develop and be able to actually pull out that potential. It's also one of the things that, I really like the way that, Flash is utilized in, the Justice League cartoon, because you know that, like, well, if he used this power, then he would be one of the strongest, most completely unbeatable heroes ever, but he's still maturing as a hero. So he only has those little moments where he goes basically beyond the speed of light or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's too much of a goofball to, in order to focus his power and use it the way that he should, quote unquote.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. I think it's one of those things where when you create rules, you kind of give yourself almost more creative freedom because you find ways to work around the rules you created and give more weight to those rules. So I don't know if the Arc of Embodiment really was that great of an example of it. I don't know if it's that big of a difference that I'm really truly like, wow, this is incredible. But it is better than just saying he can do anything and then they don't do really cool things actually with it. Fifth question. What is one villain for Fairy Tail you wish was done better? Acnologia.
Yeah, yeah. But also one villain?
I guess if I have to go with another one, Bradman. Bradman was such a fucking awesome name that he needed to be more than what he was. I can't even
remember. I am Bradman.
I'm like that dude, like with that look and that fucking name, he needed to be amazing. And I barely remember what I think he had like a dark portal power maybe or something, or like he had poison in the air, something like that.
Like his entire body would like, you know, yeah, infect and poison stuff.
Yeah, anti-magic poison or something like that. And final question, will another character that you recap get the Frosh voice? And if so, who?
Maybe.
Was the Frosh voice that you just think? Frosh thinks so,
Frosh thinks so, too!
I'm sure that voice will get used for something else. It was like me with my sister's dogs. After a while, I gave them all unique voices. But after a while, they were all just, like, starting to blend together. It was like an annoying one, and then the one big dog who we gave Foghorn Leghorn voice to.
Alright, think that what we'll do here is we'll get through the rest of July and then call it.
Okay.
All right. More questions from Great Rhapsode here. Dear Nick, Chaos Emperor Dragon, Envoy of the End. And Chris, Lackluster Soldier, Envoy of the Beginning. Hey, the guy's got a few card game related questions. Woo! First off, Nick said he had never watched Cardfight Vanguard. I understand given your schedule, you can't watch anime all that often, but I think you'd like the first season. Recommend checking it out. Okay. Actual question time. What was your favorite Yu-Gi-Oh! GX arc? The third one, where they go into the alternate world, did a lot of character development, had probably the most interesting, complex villain. And started off with some characters that were kind of questionably and annoying, and actually ended up doing something worthwhile with basically all of them. Even frickin' I hated Johan for so much of it, and ended up doing some actual cool stuff with him. So, although Darkness will always hold a place in my heart for how much that name got said. Second, is there a character deck you have tried imitating? Yes, many times. Usually never with like actual cards because I don't have that much money. But, whenever I would like, you know, try out one of the video games or something like that, you know, I would be playing around and I would try stuff out. I've made many, many decks, like that. Third, have you ever seen Yu-Gi-Oh! Season Zero? No.
I've read part of it and seen the bridge portions of it, but yeah.
And what do you think is the funniest episode of Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged?
That's tough to say. I don't, like, it's hilarious. Like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged is legitimately, when I was young, that was like, I think I gave this compliment to, you know, Billy at one point.
Billy?
Martin, sorry. I don't know why I'm talking to Billy. I told you, I'm having a stroke today. I gave that compliment to Martin at one point where I was like, you know, when I was really young, we used to quote Simpsons to each other. And then when I was in high school, we used to quote Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged to each other. Like, it was a hilarious show, but I can't think of like a single episode that stands out just because I don't remember where certain jokes happened in which episodes or whatnot.
I think the one that stands out to me is the Christmas special that he did where the three ghosts visit Kaiba. Not based on any particular episode, but I think that just as it's so funny as a concept to me.
I think I like the Joey episodes a lot too, just because Joey's usually great for just comedic jokes because he's just such a gooper of a character. Maybe my favorite joke of all time though was one that he really made me notice something where it was like, my Valentine's in this arc. We remember her fights. She battled Joey when she lost that one. And then she battled Panic when she lost that one too. Well, then she battled Mai, and obviously she won that one. Oh wait, no, she lost that one too.
Wait, she lost that one too?
It's like, holy shit, she has lost everybody. How did she make it to the finals?
Oh god. No, I lost that one on purpose, though.
All right. Questions here from The Dark Might. Hey there, why Ruler Batman anime series and Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie T? You know, unrelated to that, I normally would be mad, but recently I had a friend I was talking to who we were talking about, like, comic book characters we resemble or, like, we feel we, like, kind of embody. And she threw out there that she was like, you seem like a Hal Jordan type to me because you're creative and always willing to help, but you're also kind of a dick. And I was like, you know, I never considered that before. That does seem fitting. I guess I should like maybe Hal Jordan more. So there's something. Also, I feel like I have a connection to Ryan Reynolds now. Sorry. One, I have noticed that the crossovers are a pretty big thing in recent years with Western comics. Examples being Star Trek, Green Lantern, Batman, Teenage Turtles, etc. If you could choose one superhero and or villain from Western comics and cross them over into My Hero Academia or One Punch Man for your manga, the One Punch Man manga for a dream fight, who would you choose? Dark Might suggests Lobo from DC having to destruct a thon battle with All Might from My Hero.
For reasons that I can't go into full detail on, because they're based on an in-joke, Martian Manhunter.
Okay.
And I'm not even going to bother explaining, but there's an in-joke that I have about him that tickles me greatly, so.
I'll just be predictable and I'll say Captain America having to fight with Bakugo. I think it'd be kind of cool. Just, like, trying to teach him.
Yeah.
Two, I actually wanted to apologize for that date, marry, kill, food wars question I said last time, since obviously I didn't think that went all the way through with the implications that question brought up. So here's a food wars makeup game that's hopefully much better, even though it doesn't have quite as crunchy of a name. For this one, I'd like you to play Collaboration, Shokugeki, and Stagiaire. For this one, you must pick a Totsuki Institute to make a collaboration dish with, and what would that dish be? Two, pick any character to have a Shokugeki against, test your skills against theirs, try to win something from them. And three, pick a Totsuki alumni to study under and improve yourself for Stagiaire Week.
Collaboration, I would do Soma, because he's all flexible like that. Mm-hmm. To test my skills against, fucking Yoshino, I guess. It's like, whatever, I can beat her. I don't even remember what her specialty is supposed to fucking be. Sosuke alumni to improve under. Oh gosh, what's her name? There was one girl that was very laid back that, about everything. She was the, God, she's got like a side braid and she, well, whatever, I can't remember. She's always making fun of Shinomiya, so I can't remember her, but I can't remember her name. Oh well. I might find it while you're thinking.
Okay. For collaboration, I would say, I'm gonna say, American Flag Bikini Girl, because, you know, meat's the only thing I know how to work with, really, like when it comes to cooking beef, essentially, so I think that's the only one I really have a chance with. Alumni to study under and prove myself for Statue Year Week would be Alice. I think she has a lot to teach, and I think she'd be kind of good at that. Plus, I'd like to learn, like, all the different, like, scientific improvements of, that has kind of come into food processing and things like that. Like, it's just an area I kind of have an interest in. And to have a Shokugeki against, I'm going to face the fatter, unliked Aldini brother and still take their stupid moon pizza cutter.
Well, you want to get Aldini pissed off at you?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to fucking... I don't have to do another Shokugeki. I only have to do one.
I challenge you to a Shokugeki for all my brother's honor and ancestral blade. And you're like, no.
I'm keeping this forever. He's like, how do you lose to my brother? He made a four cheese pizza. It's like, well, I thought the only thing that could beat a four cheese pizza was a pizza with any other topping but cheese on it. And turns out that's all I needed. The dishes, all the judges were like, a pepperoni pizza? This is much better than all cheese.
What? All the judges are like, I love Hawaiian style pizza.
This is amazing. Something that's not just cheese? How avant-garde. Take his stupid moon cutter.
By the way, the Tosuke alumni I was thinking of was Hinako.
Okay.
Good.
Oh, I guess for alumni, I couldn't pick Alice. She's not an alumni yet.
That's right.
Jirichiro. That's
sure.
Yeah, I'm going to go with him. There we go. Question three. Have either of you ever played JoJo Bizarre Adventure Eyes of Heaven? If so, who are your favorite characters to fight with in combo move? I have played a little of it. I picked it up not that long ago. I did not get too far into it, unfortunately. I got kind of distracted by other stuff, mostly school. But I did love playing with Josuke a lot. I eventually found that, because I was playing through the story mode, you don't get access to everyone right away because you go basically by which part they're jumping into. But I did find that I enjoyed, obviously, Jotaro because he's the first one you get, but Giorno was really cool too.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll end on this one then from Kenny Varnes. Dear Nick Chris Pickles, as of the time of this email, Linkara has just reviewed the first chapter of Delicious in Dungeon and thought it was pretty good. How violently does Nick disagree with him, and does he regret not making a cameo just to tell him his opinion is, in Dr. Cox's voice, wrong, 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 wrong? Everyone's entitled to their opinion, even if they are wrong.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people like Delicious in Dungeon. I had people coming out of the woodwork to be like, this is great. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah, remember the other week when Alice was like, I don't like Dr. Stone, but Black Clover is amazing. People can have stupid opinions, but we can still respect them.
She just turned into Katori for a while.
Yeah. Well, that's what people with shitty opinions have. They sound like, they sound like Runchilda from fucking Banjo-Kazooie.
That voice has gotten so much more amusing to me since we started doing that.
I'm great.
Number two. At one point when reading Aho Girl, did Nick ever wish that Japan go back to imperialism so the creator would get his arms chopped off with a chainsaw for writing and drawing out a pun? Okay. However bad some manga are, I don't actually wish personal harm on their creators. I just want people to realize that they're bad. Oh, man. I think that the only times that I would ever actually wish harm upon a creator is if it actually, like, would encourage someone to do something bad. Like, it would inspire someone to do harmful things or take harmful stances against people. Like, if a manga is super sexist and encourages that kind of thing, or encourages violence against certain groups, or encourages, like, anarchy or something like that, then you're an asshole, and you're going to be doing bad shit with your series. But if you just do a series about a girl who's just stupid and annoying, it's really bad, but it is harmless, so I don't care that much about it. It was just really annoying to have to read it. So there you go.
Yeah.
Question 2.1. Would you also say the same to the likes of Oh Great, as well as the creators of Today Love Starts, Future Diary, Wolf Guy, and the Spider-Man manga? Same answer for all of those.
Yes.
Today Love Starts is...
Wolf Guy's pretty fucked up, too. We didn't really cover it as much, but there is a part of 3 days of rape in there.
Mm-hmm. And Future Diary, I think that people just misinterpret. They're both crazy and stupid. Air Gear, I think, is just...
Oh, Great's just a strange person. Let's go with that. I have a friend who likes Future Diary, and at first I thought, like, he just has bad taste, but this is also the same guy who has a picture of his own face as the wallpaper on his phone, so I'm pretty sure he's just a sociopath, and it's just, like, par for the course. Like, he's like, I don't see anything wrong with Yuno. She makes perfect sense to me.
Why would you have a picture?
Weird, right? It's fucking really weird and creepy because he sees nothing weird about it. He's like, I think it's weird you guys don't have a picture of yourself as your phone in background.
Does he actually say that?
Yes! He has two different pictures of himself as his background, by the way. One for the regular wallpaper and two for the wallpaper in text messages. He also made the faceplate of his fucking watch his face as well. He's a weird guy. Okay.
Alright. Speaking of edgelord opinions, what do you think of the uber controversial YouTuber Razor Fist, self-proclaimed probably offended everyone on Twitter by shitting on Chester Bennington after his suicide? I don't know about the last one because I'm scared to look on there because he's such a snobby drama queen. That's pretty shitty if he did that. Secondly, I tried to look the guy up, for context when I was first going through this email. And it turns out that at some point in the past, I blocked him for something shitty he said. I don't remember what it was, and I didn't remember that I had done it until I saw, you have blocked this person. I was like, oh, okay. So I guess that he's a piece of shit if I actually blocked him for something that he said. There have been very, very few instances where I've actually blocked people on Twitter. One of them was over some really, really nasty fallout from the Bleach article that I wrote. It had nothing to do with me. It was the way that Jacob was actually getting treated over it. And I was like, all right, some of these people I never need to actually have in my life again. So that's probably where it came in, was that he said something bad about someone that I consider a good person and friend. But yeah, the kind of stuff that was being said at that time seems about on par with, you know, shitting on a guy who committed suicide recently. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff anyone would do on, like, a personal attack on somebody is definitely, like, fucked up. I don't know what he said in regards to Chester Benz.
I don't, and yeah. I don't need to see it. That's the reason I blocked him in the first place, is that I don't need to fucking hear that kind of thing from pieces of shit like that.
The one element I will say is, I don't know if when you say shitting on is him actively insulting him or if it's making jokes about it. Because if it is the latter, it's something where I always kind of look at it with a grain of salt, knowing full well that at one time that was myself. Like, when I was in my early 20s, I thought it was the hip, edgy, shock lore thing to do to make, like, jokes about dark subjects. I mean, there's still people who are like, I loved it when you made all those Chris Benoit jokes. And it's like, there's an element to it of humor, but then when you get older, you're like, it's kind of fucked up, and it's not actually that funny. It's, you know, something where I think it's a young guy thing that making jokes at the expense of others and situations like that is something that's done for humor. I don't know if that's the situation with this guy. He literally could have just been like, Chester Bennington died good. He was a dickhead. I don't know. But if it is a sense of making jokes, because I have friends who try to make jokes at that, and you're just like, yeah, whatever. I mean, you're in your early 20s. It's what you do, I guess. So I don't know about that, but I will just put that additional context onto it, because it would be hypocritical be to be like, it's wrong forever, when it's like, you got popular for partially because you used to make, like, sing songs about Chris Benoit killing his kid, you know?
Yeah. Those were the days.
Those were the days. Off topic. I'll have to tell you something about we all in the family I learned recently, too. That's really fucked up, by the way.
Okay. Last question on the Knieve Arons email is, why the fuck did it take you so long to review Death Note despite both Light and Ryuk featuring prominently on the thumbnail since the very beginning of the show? We just never got around to it.
Well, yeah, well, there's the thing, too. When we first started Weekly Manga Recap, the reviews we did were always for new series. We didn't do... Like, I know we did an episode about Aishou 21, but it wasn't a review of it. It was just us kind of talking about Aishou 21, what we liked about it. And I think we did something similar for Death Note at one time. I think we did an episode where we just talked about Death Note, but we didn't review it. But there's also an element, too, that that was a very start of Weekly Manga Recap, which was 6 years ago now at this point. Opinions have changed since then, and we're reading it with a fresh set of eyes, and that was kind
of we also weren't reading it at the same time we were reading Bakuman, so.
Yeah, and it just definitely helps to kind of see a series again after a long period of time has passed, and to see what's changed about it. Plus, it was nice as a way to kind of get into Death Note again before the movie came out.
Also, it actually was not our choice to have that piece of fan art made for us. That was done by someone who just kind of decided on what page from the Death Note manga to go with, and we thought it was really cool, so we just used it.
Alexander Arts, by the way. I remember Alexander. He created that for us. He's still actually around. Every so often I'll see him. If not here, then on Dice Funk. I know he watches that and occasionally posts on that as well, so thank you, Alexander. I remember maybe it was even a year ago that he was like, came back, he's like, holy shit, you guys still using my image for your title card? It's like, yeah.
It's a good image.
Yeah, it really works.
All right, so that's going to do it then for this edition of Q&A. We thank you guys for listening in and for just listening to the show in general. We will have a regular episode this Wednesday where we will finally talk about Diamond is Unbreakable, JoJo Part 4.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And, yeah. That's going to do it, everybody. Thank you for asking questions. Be sure, of course, if you have an answer for those that Chris asked at the top of the show, to send them to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, along with any other questions that you want us to answer in the future. It will take us a few months to get to them. We are currently just under 4 months behind, but we will answer everything eventually. So just keep on sending those in.
Yeah, we get through them. The thing I wanted to bring up, I recently... So I knew that there were racist episodes of All in the Family. It was kind of his shtick. And there are some that you were like, this is astonishingly racist for the time. Like talking about a black person moving into a neighborhood and saying that their watermelon wines will be falling from the sky. But I just recently learned and have listened to, there was an episode where Edith is almost raped and it's played for laughs.
Ooh.
In an astonishing way. Because they try to treat the scene seriously at points, but they still put in the, like, schmaltzy sitcom laugh. So it's like a line where he's like, I'm going to take everything you have. She's like, well, wouldn't you want a cup of coffee instead? Cue laugh track. And there's a point where even the rapist gets a laugh because he has to be like, oh, this lady, why won't she just let me rape her? Like, she's exhausted by her antics. And of course... This horrific rape scene ends after she hits him in the pie, in the face with the pie. It is astonishing that this existed. Even back then, I feel like someone had to be like, this can't be kosher, right? It is astonishing. We've come a long way. Goodbye, okay. Goodbye, everybody.